Real Racing USA on the airwaves on a very special night here at the Snook River Grill. I'm Rick Angies.
Scott McAllister. Good to be here with you, Rick.
Hi, Jack Smith.
And I'm Bobby Orr.
All right, man. Guys.
Well, we wrestled Bobby in here tonight.
Yeah.
You know, had to.
Long distance, right?
Yeah, it is long distance for Bobby. He's been up and down the road here a bit lately.
It is.
So what are we going to talk to tonight? Before we get into the main part of our show, which is a tribute to Pete Orr,
mm-hmm.
We are going to talk to Scott Reeves, who races in the Fast Car Pro Trucks. We were supposed to have him on last week, and we weren't able to get him on. We're going to talk to him for a few minutes. And
So, you had quite an adventure this past weekend, Jack.
295 miles an hour. Phew.
Screaming.
Funny car. Crazy. Too much. Oh, my God.
You never
God.
Saw him before.
Oh, well, not that fast. Not up close.
No, not up close.
You know, I'm like 30 feet away taking pictures, and my insides are being turned into jello.
He called me up and he says, I got about 15 feet away, and the next thing I knew, I was about 30 feet away.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, it was awesome.
It's impressive.
It's very impressive.
And then you realize how crazy those guys are.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been, but I heard the night show that the Top Fuel guys put on are incredible.
Oh, it was. And it was the biggest show, biggest drag racing show in the history of Rockingham Dragway.
Wow.
They had 50,000 people there. Wow. It was unbelievable.
That's how you promote it, man. You got to promote that stuff.
Very cool.
They did a really good job out there.
It was very cool.
I did Crasherama, which was awesome, too.
That was wild, wasn't it?
Billy Martino and them over at U.S. International Speedway, they had a blast. They really did it upright. It was pretty doggone cool. Don Nerone, those guys. You know, it was $10 worth of – if $10, you got your money's worth out of that. I mean, from the suicide spiral, that guy. He missed the pile of cars by about 2 feet.
No doubt.
I mean, man, he got out of the car. He was standing up, waving to the crowd and stuff. I was worried for him, but he did it. And the motorcycle demolition guys, dude, I wouldn't do that for nothing in the world.
That was fun to watch.
They were crawling off of there. Some were burned and scraped and torn up, and it was. But they were just out there going at it. So there was that, and the demolition derby. So they did it around the front straightaway. You know, it was just right there. They just put it right on about probably 30 feet either side of the straightaway. Put the barriers up. I mean, they had 26 cars just battling.
Did you ever think you would see a demolition derby at USA International Speedway?
No, and I have to say, Barry was there, and I said, Barry, man, down there in turn four, I really am a fearing for your track down there. So he's like, I don't know, but no, I'm sure they had it all under control. No, I never thought I'd see anything like that. I never thought I would see
a demolition. Great crowd out there, too.
It was packed. The front stands, you couldn't get another person in there. It was amazing, but yeah, if you've never gone, I would say it's definitely worth the $10, you know, and they're doing it again over to Orlando. They use the whole track when they go over there.
Oh, yeah. Standing room only every time.
Yeah, we're rescheduling ours. Ours was supposed to have been a month ago, but we're rescheduling ours, and it's crazy because we do ours on a Friday night, and then we race Saturday night.
And, you know, the cool thing about it this time is I also saw this. I was telling the crowd there that June the 1st, I believe, is when they're going to Orlando, which is a Friday night.
Right.
June the 2nd is the first night of the Triple Crown over at U.S. International Speedway. So if you didn't get enough of the Crash-O-Rama before,
right.
You go, coming up on June the 1st, you can go over to Orlando, see them all beat the heck out of one another. I mean, dude, it's brutal. There's
no
some
doubt.
Brutal
shots. I did it for 3 years, Scott.
You hear that thing. I mean, you hear them pound that wall. Uh-huh. And you just, wham, it just vibrates inside the whole doggone place. And I just never had thought that I would. I mean, you know, at first you're like, oh, don't hit that car. And then you're like, drill him. So I guess that's just, it just gets in that frame of mind. But it was
first
fun.
Time I came over the hill when I was doing Demolition Derby, I thought I was going to throw up. I mean, I was scared to death. I was in a big old Buick. But once I got over that hill, man, it was all over. It was.
I saw some.
I'm paying for it now.
I mean, they had one race out there that was called the drag race, and it wasn't called drag because they were dragging down the front straightaway. It was drag because I think they took the rear wheels off the car.
Right.
So they just skidded all over the place, man. It was pretty crazy. It was just some crazy
they
stuff.
They got one of those called a skid race where they take a front wheel drive car and they take the
that's
back tires
was,
off
yeah.
and they
that's
put
what
skids
it
on it. Yeah.
That's what skid it is. Race. I'm yeah. sorry. Yeah. So, you know, I really took my hat. Billy Martino and Donna Roan and Chuck Rush. You
yeah.
know that guy?
He's Chuck's a maniac.
He's more of a maniac than I am. So
he does that microphone thing pretty good.
He
too,
was
don't.
Digging. Yeah, he did a great job good. Out there. So the whole program ran really smooth, and I had to give it. It was packed.
Yeah.
So good deal for those guys.
Yeah, that's right. The reason we went up there to Rockingham for this drag racing thing is it's something Craig Clark's been pestering me for the better part of 5 years. We need to cover more of the drag racing, and so we went up there to sort of begin to do that. Next week on next week's Real Racing USA show, we got some of the top IHRA funny car pro top fuel guys and all them guys.
We don't call it real racing for nothing.
That's right.
I mean, you know, I was telling Bobby on the way up here, a lot of race car drivers, they have this conception, or a lot of the people we deal with, that you can only turn left in this business. And I said, you know, there's people that turn right and left, and there's people that go straight. Get paid lots of money, too.
Yeah, somebody asked me, well, wait a minute, I thought your show was called Short Track America. Well, it is. Well, a quarter mile
short. It's
short,
pretty
track.
Short. Yeah. You know,
it's
that's
a short
the
track.
Whole thing. I tell them, you know, it depends. There's a lot of people that get paid big bucks for going a quarter mile. And they get big bucks for turning right and left, and so there's more than just turning left out there. You should kind of open up your check and see what else is out there for you before you just kind of lock into one deal. Because there's a lot of opportunities out there if you give yourself a chance.
Absolutely.
I've always had the quote that if it smells fast and goes funny, I'm there.
Exactly. That's exactly right, man.
That's the way it is.
You know, there's more odd smells at a drag strip than there is at a stock car.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
There's
no
some really unidentifiable type things. You know, like, what is that?
All of a sudden, your eyes start watering.
That was my deal. Was my eyes. I was trying to act like I knew what I was doing, showing people around, saying, yeah, look at this, look at that. And all of a sudden, my eyes swelled up so big I couldn't see.
One of those top fuel cars goes off. They got two of them at a time. But when those guys go off, it's like, it's. I mean, you really have to be right there to get a grip on this. They slingshot out of there like they were, I mean, it's like
somebody pulled the rubber band back and let them go.
Before you could even get a grasp of what's happening,
they're through the
lights. They're
gone. 4 seconds is not a long time.
And those big fat tires in the back, they shrink up, they get real skinny and tall, and then, they just take off. We went to South Georgia Motorsports Park that first time we went there, and they had a guy practicing out there. Yeah. Man, we were just standing there. We were practicing for a Pro Cup.
Well, they have the top. They do NHRA.
There was a guy practicing over there, and it was unbelievable. Yeah. It was loud.
Yeah, they
you ever seen the semi with a jet engine on it?
Yeah, they were up there. As a matter of fact, Pepe from Sarasota. He was up there. As a matter of fact, there was a bunch of people from Braden and Sarasota up there racing. I keep hearing these names from, Joe Blow from Braden and Florida.
Right.
I've tracked some of them guys down. But, Pepe was up there with his semi-jet thing. But we didn't hang around for the end of that whole deal. We'd been there from 9 o'clock in the morning, so we left around 8 o'clock. I'd had my fill.
Yeah, I mean it's a new experience when you go there, and it's cool because you can get right there on top of the cars, right in the pit. I mean, there's no pit passes. Everybody gets a pit pass in those fields, so it's pretty cool.
Every ticket's a pit pass.
Yeah, I mean that's a real cool deal about those things is you can get right on top of them and see. I mean, those guys, and they go to work, man.
Yeah, when they pull them fuelers in, they completely rebuild the motor.
Every single time.
90 minutes.
Yep.
Completely tear down a motor.
Completely tear it down and rebuild it.
I mean, when it goes back in there, it
we watch them do that.
It's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, but, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for people there. They just don't realize, man, that's a big sport. People are getting into it. Those junior dragsters, man, that stuff is blown up. I'm telling you, that's big business.
Is there any other big deals we need to talk about?
Big deals?
Yeah, like nobody got in trouble. Last week we were coming here, you know, we were going around like state of Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, like any big deals that happened. Well, we had tasered race car drivers at Auburndale.
What? Where was I at?
We had live reports.
I didn't hear about that.
Tasered.
Reports were there.
Right? Tasered race car drivers.
We didn't have any of that this week.
No. I think I saw that at Crash-A-Rama.
Well.
Now, I might have seen tasered race car drivers at Crash-A-Rama, but I just didn't know it was happening. But I wouldn't doubt it because those guys...
We had a lot of fun out at DeSoto this weekend.
Did anybody tasered over there?
I don't think there was any tasers.
There was some
rolling around on the ground. And
what's going on?
There should be some good racing to look forward to next weekend. There's the Goodyear Challenge 100 laps at Speed World on Friday night, and then you got the Sunbelt Super Late at New Smyrna on Saturday night.
See, Bobby's on top of this stuff.
Oh, no doubt. That was
Bobby knows where to go.
That's a good back-to-back deal.
Those are two great shows to go even just watch. So it's a really good race in there.
I mean,
I'm not going to the races this weekend.
I wonder if Jeff Schofield's going to be racing in the 125 lap Sunbelt race. I don't think so.
Well, who was driving his car?
Who was driving his car?
Who was in his car?
I don't know.
I forget.
BJ McLeod.
BJ was in his car.
BJ's been working with him.
And Choquette was in. Choquette's
been in
Dickie's car.
Dickie's car.
Yeah.
And.
Amazing, isn't it?
Everybody's getting a shot. Hey, Dickie's car's been around a long time. That's a good deal.
So what's the rundown here? We got State Senator Bill Posey at 8 o'clock.
And we got all kind of people calling in. You know, at first I was thinking, gosh, who can we call? And, of course, started going through the list and did some research. Who's going to call us? I have I was going through some of the photos, as you said, in the photo section. And I saw somebody had scanned Pete Orr's recommendation from Darrell Waltrip, as a matter of fact, for the NASCAR Busch Series. So I got a hold of his business manager, and he's going to be calling in a little bit later on so we get a chance to talk to DW personally.
You know, I have one article, because as you guys know, I'm just, like, really not a big, big, huge nasty car fan. But I have one piece of fan paraphernalia that's autographed. I have an autographed DW hat.
It was like a Mountain Dew hat, or was it what kind of hat is it?
It's a 17.
That's sweet. Yeah. Western.
Yeah.
Western Auto Parts.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Did you get that on eBay?
No, it's on my wall in my family room.
Yeah, where'd you get it from, though? I mean, did he autograph it and hand it to you?
Yeah, you know, I have connections.
Oh, well, hey, you know, I have to make some phone calls. Ain't another phone call I made?
Actually, you know who helped me that? Jill Overstreet, I have to thank for that because it's her son Jason has worked with those folks.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
Another guy called that wanted to be a part of the Pete Orr Memorial was a driver in the NASCAR ranks. He's a former Busch Series champion, and now he's picked up a ride over at Riley DeHaan Motorsports. David Green going to be calling in as well. So we have that coming up, as well as some local guys here. Here locally, Leroy Porter, we're going to get a chance to talk to him, and Mike Cope. And Travis Kittleson, and some other people as well.
You know, your job is where you're sitting. Is you see that little piece of equipment right there?
This?
You're the phone man.
You're the phone man.
Phone man.
Yeah, you're the phone man. See, the middle guy's the phone man.
Is it?
So when Rick pushes that button over there and takes us to a quick commercial break.
Right. I just say Short Track USA.
Then when he does that, you... actually call that number right there, and then we come back and we have that person. It's absolutely amazing how this stuff works.
Yeah, I hope somebody could talk me through that, because that sounds like a lot. But we'll see.
It's very technical.
It does sound kind of technical. But
Snook River Grill is quite the place, huh?
Snook River Grill
2505 Manatee Avenue East.
They had to reserve us a spot in the back, didn't they? This place is pretty packed already.
It's packed up in there. It's filling up quite quickly up there.
Yeah.
But it smells good.
That's Cajun shrimp over there.
Somebody's already been eating in there.
That shrimp will don't get the shrimp.
It's hot.
It'll hurt you.
Come
on.
If your sinuses are all clogged up, get the shrimp.
Oh, well, there you go. So, yeah, we got that. couple other people we're going to get a chance to talk to, B.J. McLeod, and some other people like, let's see, who did I just get off the phone with? Justin Frawdy. He'll be
Lee
calling
Falk,
in.
Mike
Lee Falk. So
David Russell.
David Russell. So we're going to hear, hopefully be hearing
we're
some,
gonna have some stories.
Good stories. Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I want to hear
you
about.
You guys ever heard of a guy named Robbie Loomis?
Robbie Loomis.
Robbie Loomis.
Of course,
really?
Former crew chief.
Very possible he might.
Very possible. He'll be calling in as well as perhaps.
Let's do this one, Rick, and then we'll come back and get this other.
You talk for a couple more minutes, seconds.
What are you doing over there?
I'm putting stuff together here.
Isn't this amazing how this stuff works?
You know, he's over there in a whole other world. He's listening and doing. He's like he's bipolar.
Look at this little toy.
What do you got?
It's too bad we're not on like where people could see this.
I know. Well, thank goodness they can.
What do you got, Jack?
I got another little toy over there.
What do you got?
Got all kinds
of blowing toys out all night here.
This is scary. Oh, he's got his own mixing board.
Oh.
He's got.
Check it out, man.
That's the replacement for the Atari, huh?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently, those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Oh, that's right, motherfucker!
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out loud!
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, old Sultan of Shouting, because while there may be no I in team, thanks to you, there's always an F and a U. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to Sprint Car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you.
We're back at the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue East.
Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA with our special tribute to P-Door. Jack, who do we got on the phone with us?
Well, before we even get into that, we have two extra hosts in here with us tonight.
True,
Bobby Orr,
very true.
Bobby Orr's with us, too. We have on the line Scott Reeves.
Scott, you there, brother?
Fast Car Pro Truck Driver.
Yes, sir, I am here.
Okay. Now, how does it feel to be the opening act for DW, State Senator Bill Posey, Leroy Porter, B.J. McConnell? How's that feel, man?
I would appreciate it if you didn't remind me of that. Why do you want to stress me out so early?
There ain't nobody better for the job than you, bud.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bobby.
So, you're racing in the Fast Car Pro Trucks this year?
Yes, we're going to go ahead and try to win the touring series. So,
Yeah, I think, what, you're second in points or tied for first or something like that?
No, not after Bronson. I think we're fourth now.
Little issue.
Break on us. Everything was going our way.
Bronson will do that to you.
The bull ring bit you, huh?
It'll bite you.
And now I know why they call it the bull ring.
The bull ring.
It's tough over there, man. You come up out of that hole over in turn two, man. It gets rough.
You get your feelings hurt over there.
Yeah, you will.
It was very interesting. I was glad I went. I learned a lot, and I actually look forward to going back there now that I know the place a little bit.
That's usually what a lot of people say is, hey, once I get a round or two in over there, I'm a lot better than they like that place.
Scott, you've raced a lot of other stuff before you got to the truck series, haven't you?
Yes, we started out with the late models, which is now called the Supers, and I would drive my brother's mini stock. And just play around with that, and now we're with the trucks, and we're just into having fun, and it's actually some of the most fun I've ever had driving.
That's cool.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you can't have fun, you might as well go home.
Right.
It wasn't fun up at Lakeland when you whacked that wall, was it?
That wasn't fun.
No, yeah, when it affects your home life for several months, that changes a few things. It didn't mean I didn't want to get right back into it and get going, but I'm reminded of it every morning I get out of bed.
Yeah. It kind of puts things into perspective.
Right, but, I mean, you know, I wouldn't trade anything for it. It's just the way it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
This is about, like, what the third or fourth year of the Fast Car Pro Trucks. Have you been involved with the series all along, or?
No, I would say it was. I think it was 2004. We went up with the Super to the Governor's Cup, and we were running a 100-lap mini stock race, and we realized the Super was no longer fun. You know, we couldn't compete. You know, dollar wise, we're out to date. And it was just, you know, on the way home. After the two races, after we started the Governor's Cup and just pulled in, and on the way home, we were just talking, you know, that it wasn't fun anymore, and the truck thing came up, and that it sounded fun with the crate motors, and when I came home, I put up the Super for sale, and that changed everything, and everything since that day has been a lot more fun to go to the racetrack. You know, every time we go, we have a chance to win and run up front, and we're not getting outspent. You know, not that we have the most money, but we're not getting beat by money now. So it all changed in 2004 at the Governor's Cup.
What was that, Bobby?
Just driver you're getting beat by now, Speedy?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said now you're just getting beat by driver now.
Right, and now if they beat us, they earned it. Before they...
I've seen you run that truck, man. You run pretty stout in that thing. I see you every time I see you, you're always up there near the front.
Right. It's just so much more fun. It changed my whole family's outlook to the race. You know, going with the Super, there's a lot more stress.
It's a lot for the average family working man to have a super late model and be competitive
exactly
when you got
right.
full-fledged race teams with hired everyday crews. So it's hard for average family man to compete against that kind of stuff.
Right, and now I know what your dad felt when he pulled behind me or Dickie or any of the, you know, Blue when we were running late models, when they ran behind me, you know, how they felt driving this stuff, because that's how I feel in the truck. Is like, you know, this is what the big guns running the late models must have felt when they pulled up behind me when I was running the late models. Right. You know, everything, you know, because going from a Super, which was so fast, to the trucks, which is, you know, I don't want to say a lot slower, but slower. You still have to drive the dickens out of it, but, you know, it's a lot more fun. You know, now anybody pulls up behind me, you know, it's not, you know, just, it's not Pete Orr, it's not Ballou, it's not Anderson. You know, there's no intimidation factor anymore. And it's just fun. You know, I love running door to door with these people, and, you know, and the kids that come in there that think they know everything and think they can drive. I mean, I enjoy seeing them trying to intimidate me.
We're talking with Scott Reeves, Fast Car Pro Cup driver. I was just getting ready to ask you about that. You're not intimidated by these young kids at all, huh?
No, the only thing with the young kids that run this stuff is, you know, some of them, a lot of them are fast, but they, you know, I know they're there to learn. And, you know, all they see is out the front windshield. And that's what makes them a little bit dangerous to race with, because they don't know you're sticking your nose under them. But I understand that. You know, it's all part of, you know, racing. But it's fun for, you know, I see, like, somebody I've never heard of with the Ginn development stuff show up. And, you know, I'm not, you know, it's not intimidating.
You're not impressed, huh?
No, but it's fun because, you know, one of these kids is going to make it. And I'm going to make sure I beat them all. So one day I'm sitting here watching TV, I can say, you know what, I beat them.
Exactly. I beat them when. But that, yeah, I know what you mean, man. You got some high dollar people back there. And it's just not, it's kind of comparing apples to oranges, to be honest with you.
That's funny. That's true, though. I can't tell you, you've experienced this too, Scott. How many people you ever talk to says, I used to beat the hell out of Matt Kenseth. Who's
yeah,
he? Right?
Exactly, yeah. Everybody always says this kind of thing.
And everybody in North Carolina has beat Junior in the late model stock something.
Exactly.
Right. I raced against him in slot cars.
Exactly.
Really did. I Dave Mayer slot car track. Absolutely. When my dad was racing Bush and we lived up there.
So when's your next when's your next race, Scott?
We're going to go ahead and go to the Columbia race, which I've never been to, Columbia, so.
Columbia Motorsports
Park. But after Bronson, it's probably going to seem like a three-wide racetrack.
That's a much bigger racetrack, no doubt. When do you go there?
It's 3 weeks from this past Saturday. That's all I know.
Okay.
It's
in May.
It all kind of runs together after a while, doesn't it, Scott?
Hey, No, it does. 3 weeks running the touring series where they have it spaced out. I realize by week two, I'm going nuts and thinking about going and running a regular show. That's a long time in between. But talking about, you know, racing these young kids, you know, I know BJ is supposed to be there tonight, correct? You know, my first late model race, I had to pass BJ. I just don't tell anybody I beat him that night just because he was 13 or 14.
Yeah, really.
You know, nobody else needs to know that.
Exactly. Hey, all you got to just say is, I beat B.J. McLeod one time.
Yeah, yeah.
No big deal. Exactly. That's strategic plant marketing right there, strategic PR.
You wanted to know he was in middle school.
Exactly. Hey. So he couldn't see over the steering wheel.
I'll tell you what, Scott, we've been trying to get you on now for 3 weeks. I'll tell you what we're going to do is there's a whole lot of other things we want to talk to you about because you have a background that goes back some generational things here. So what we'll do is we'll have you back here one of these times during the next few months, and we can talk about some of your relatives who know how to race a car.
Sure. And I'm sure you guys are going to have a great show tonight. And Bobby knows, I mean, my family thought the world of Pete Orr. And you know, he was a great guy. Everybody knows that. I've never heard anybody say anything negative about it. I hope you guys have a great show, and I look forward to listening to it.
And you're not at the firehouse tonight?
No, that was yesterday.
All right. Well, then you sit back and relax and enjoy the show, and we'll talk to you soon, Scott.
Okay, thank you very much. And, Bobby, take care.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for all the kind words, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right, man. You take care. I'll see you at the racetrack.
See you later.
Hi, Rick. You got a button to push? Or are we going to not push the button?
Do you want to push buttons?
Yeah, let's push the button.
All right.
Hi, I'm Scott Dolly, driver of the number 74 Bomber DeSoto Super Speedway. You're listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
All right, moving right along here at Short Track America, Real Racing USA, live at the Snook River Grill. Bobby Orr, Scott McAllister, Jack Smith, and myself, Rick Angies, here with a special tribute to Pete Orr. Well, Scott, who we got on the phone with us right now?
Oh, guy that knew Pete pretty good. I'd say people have heard of this driver. Won Busch Series championship before. David Green. David, nice to have you on the phone with us here at Short Track USA.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me on, and hello to Bobby and all the listeners out there. It's my pleasure to be on here today.
Hey, David. Hey to you, and we appreciate you being on with us today.
Yeah, again, my pleasure, and it's always good to talk racing and always good to talk about some good races, you know, as Pete was. And like I said, it's my pleasure to be on.
So tell me, David, we were on the way up here, Bobby and I were driving. We were talking about, obviously, some of the days that you and Pete were together. Tell me about some of your experiences that you remember with Pete.
Well, you know, it's, you know, as a racer, and don't take this wrong, it sometimes kind of all goes into a big blur, as Bobby can attest. But, you know, I think the, gosh, you know, living, growing up in Kentucky and then racing out of the Wayne Day shop in Nashville was kind of that era when we traveled the old All-American Challenge Series in NASCAR. And as we traveled that series, again, I never, ever envisioned, you know, not only making it somewhat in the All-Pro division or All-American Challenge division, but to be able to win some races and contend for a championship or two, then ultimately get a shot at some Busch racing and so on. But as I did all that, or going through the ropes, you might say, one, some of my fondest memories was traveling to Florida. And as we traveled down there, you know, we were going up against the big boys. And those big boys were obviously guys like Pete and Mike and Jimmy Cope and Daniel.
That's funny you say that, because Mike's supposed to be joining us a little later also.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Daniel Keene and, David Rogers. And I got the pleasure to see David down at New Smyrna over the wintertime and during Speed Week. But just, and I'm sure I'm missing somebody here, and I apologize as I get older here. I can't quite remember.
Right. That's all right.
But, you know, the list goes on and on. And to be able to go to Bradenton and St. Pete and, you know, Orlando and all those small, well, back then we thought they were pretty big tracks.
I was about to say, yeah.
Now they're fairly small, but, you know, that was the real race, and it still is the real race. And so, you know, those are just my memories, my fondest memories of going down and racing with all those guys. And even back then, I don't know that we looked at our competitors as strongly as maybe I do now, because back then we were simply just having fun.
I mean, back then, you know, we were talking about that earlier as well. Back then, I mean, that's really those days are long gone, where the driver used to work on his car, I mean, and drive his car to the track, unload the car, erase the car, put it back on the, you know, on the trailer, and
right,
then haul it back home.
Yeah, and then with Dick Trickle with the cigarette lighter.
Exactly.
And
I mean, those days are kind of gone and over with, but I can see that's kind of what you're talking about in those back in those days, David.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and Pete was right there as one of those guys, and I kind of envisioned myself as the same way. As, you know, we worked on every – we knew every nut and bolt of that car, we thought we did. I've later found out I didn't know quite as much as I thought I did. Plus, as you live and learn throughout the years, you would like to go back and redo that. But, you know, Pete was one of those guys that did it, you know, the old-fashioned way, like most of us were doing it, and it was fun. But yet we all took it pretty seriously, and I wish I could recapture those moments and go back, and unfortunately, you know, we can't. But that's the thing that I remember the most is as we traveled down there, not only were we going head-to-head with some of the best short track races in the country, but we were going up against a group of guys. And to be honest, I think guys like Daniel Keene and Pete, to me, they were kind of both ends of the spectrum, meaning, you know, Pete, to me, was always the Bobby Allison of short track racing, meaning, you know, obviously a terrific driver, but a terrific person. And then not to say Daniel Keene wasn't, but Daniel was always the guy that, you know, if you got into a battle with Daniel Keene, you're probably going to have to put a fence.
Yeah, he'd lay the quarter panel on you.
Well, he'd wear you with a fender.
And he still will.
And
now, as I say that, that's exactly what taught me, or I'm very appreciative of racing with him and Pete on those two realms of the spectrum, because they made you understand, yeah, you got to be aggressive, but you also got to respect others on the racetrack. And again, I hope Daniel doesn't get mad if he's saying all this, but you know, I throw out a lot of respect to Daniel and Pete for giving me the ends, sort of the bookends of what it took to be a short track racer. And in between all that, the rest of us just kind of mixed it up and tumbled around in the dryer, you might say, and fell out. So those are some of my fond memories. I never had one particular moment that stood out, other than I just knew when we pulled in the racetrack and Pete was there, there was always, number one, a smiling face.
Right.
And along with that smiling face was a intense, you know, professional racer, and that's what I remember the most, and we obviously miss the most nowadays.
Yeah, I think it was great. So real quick, before we take off here, David, obviously, you got some good stuff going on there with you and the Riley DeHaan team. Tell me a little bit about how that's going on.
Well, first of all, I wish I could stay longer. I've got more time, but y'all got more time.
We got lots of time for you, brother. We got all the time in the world for you.
I know you got.
We'll keep this restaurant open all night. That's all right.
Yeah, if you have to go to commercial, just let me know. But I'd like to spend some more time with you.
Now we got a couple other people calling in that we're going to make them stay behind you. Got Daryl Waltrip going to call in a little bit later on, and your good buddy Mike Hope, and some other people you probably know. But we'll make them hang on for you, man.
You know, I tell you, we can cut into DW's time. But
there you go.
But real quick, speaking of Mike Hope, and, you know, I don't know if he had heard, but unfortunately this past week we lost another dear friend, Dick Miller, which was CEO of Goodmart Foods back in the 90s, which Goodmart Foods was Slim Jim, Penrose, and all that. He had Parkinson's, and he lost his life there on Thursday. It was only 68, and I know Mike will have some memories of Dick as well, because Goodmart Foods, the Slim Jim brand, sponsored Mike when we were at Bobby Labonte's racing the Busch car and the All-Pro Series car. So, you know, it's another sad day in racing. But now the Riley DeHaan deal has come along pretty nicely. I've known Eddie for a long time, and I knew in 07 I wanted to do something different than what I had been doing. And these guys presented a great opportunity to Riley with the 24 Hours of Daytona cars. They were joining forces to be a part of the Busch Series and the Cup Series with the COT car. So that's coming along a little slower than we all had hoped. But, Bobby, you know as well as I do, in racing it never happens quick enough.
Ain't that the truth.
Yeah. So we're hopefully right around the corner here at Charlotte. Hopefully we'll get to debut. And I can say that our cars will be Toyotas in the Busch Series. So that's kind of exciting.
That's kind of a really exciting announcement there. That's a good deal.
Well, yeah, you know, and we watched the Bill Davis Toyota at the ARCA race in Lakeland. Smoked him there for a while.
Dude, he had out-qualified him by, I mean,
about
three-tenths of a second, the whole field. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good program, obviously, they got going on, and they're lucky to have you over there. They really are, David.
No doubt.
As classy of a guy as Pete Orr is, as Pete Orr was and is, you are as well. Obviously, it's a statesman for the entire Busch and racing and entire racing series in general.
Right.
Well, I appreciate that, and I have to say, you know, I like I told you the story earlier, I learned from the best. So hopefully carrying on, you know, what Pete saw in other drivers and portrayed in itself, I'm very honored to be able to carry that on. But the Bobby Santos kid you were talking about, he is actually going to run, you know, one of our cars basically at Richmond next weekend. And we're running Bobby because the Riley DeHaan deal have a relationship with Bill Davis. And, you know, it's our job to run Bobby in what really could be the first race for Riley DeHaan in the number 91 team. So, you know, I graciously said, heck yeah, let's take Bobby there. He seems to be a very talented young man, and our test went well up there, so we're excited about that. But, you know, look for our number 91 to show up at the track here at Charlotte, hopefully in May.
He would have certainly won that ARCA race if he hadn't got tangled up with that lap car. No,
no doubt.
About it.
There was no doubt. Nobody had anything.
He was in a different time zone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's my go. You know, Eddie will do the spot for him, and it's kind of my go, and it's something that I want to do after I hang my helmet up, hopefully starting in the 2009 season, is to be on the sideline with, you know, a young guy like a Bobby Santos that we can work with, still like Bobby Labonte.
Or like Bobby Orr, perhaps.
Bobby
or
Orr, yeah.
Bobby Orr. Yeah.
That's right. You got to get that name out there, Bobby Orr. That's right. You got to keep saying that, Dave. Keep saying it.
Absolutely, because, you know, it's still like Bobby Labonte did for me in 92. I worked for him in a shop, and little did I know I might get an opportunity to drive his car. And lo and behold, it happened. So, you know, I kind of learned so much, and Bobby kind of helped tutor me. And that's what I want to pay back to another young Bobby. So we'll see. Hopefully that could be Bobby Orr down the way. And
yeah, you didn't say one Bobby. It could be multiple Bobbies.
You know, it could be. So I want to kind of do that after I hang up my driving helmet. And but the Riley DeHaan team has promised me, you know, we can finish out this year, then take one last stab at a championship next year and kind of see what happens.
Well, one last stab for you. I tell you what, you don't need to really prove anything else where, you know, with the accomplishments you've had and just, like I said, just the way you carry yourself, everybody should be proud to have you in their series, and it's certainly good to have you here on Real Racing USA. David Green, we appreciate you having you on, and thanks again for your thoughts and memories about Pete Orr.
Well, again, I appreciate the opportunity, and I wished I had a lot of time to reminisce and look through a scrapbook, which we never did like we thought we would back then.
I know.
But pass on to Mike Cope, hello, and I know his son's been tearing up the racetrack. That's kind of cool. As soon as I see that, though, it's like I'm getting old here because I can remember when Travis was like just a little tyke, you know, and obviously Bobby being a tyke as well. But it's good to be on, and I know Pete Pete's smiling down right now and watching us all have a good time, and I try to portray that image as much as I can.
Well, we certainly do appreciate you. And once again, thanks for having you on tonight, David, and good luck to you guys, and we'll see y'all at the track.
All right, Scott, and see you, Bobby. Take care, bud.
David, thanks for being on, bud, and I'll be in touch with you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Dave Green, former Busch Series champion, done it all, seen it all, been it all. Just like Pete Orr.
David Green, class act guy.
No, yeah, I mean, David Green, I've watched him since I can remember, you know, watching Busch races and stuff. Just a laid back, I mean, just laid back.
He'll talk to anybody that comes up there and say hello, just talk to you, just like your regular everybody. He'll talk to
anybody. Hell of a race car driver.
He'll dig, brother. He can get it done. And has done. And does. And he'll still get it done
to this day.
Let me tell you what, they got a shot. If you got him in your car, you got a shot. So those guys have really done a good deal, and so hopefully he'll.
Well, it's good to hear that he's going to be working with Bobby Santos too.
Cause oh yeah, I mean, we saw that kid.
That kid's got some potential.
David's
talked to him.
Quite the mentor. Also, he's a very good guy to help bring a young guy along.
That's who you want. I mean, he's the real deal. So that's kind of cool. Have any more?
Cool.
So. I don't know. After this, let's take a break if you want to, and we'll see about getting some other guys on. As a matter of fact, maybe we'll make a call over to B.J. McLeod or Travis Kittleson or Mike Cope and perhaps even the state senator, Mr. Bill Posey.
Yep. Bill Posey will be 8 o'clock sharp.
Wow. Got to make sure we're ready for that now.
And David Russell will be in the second hour.
Had to get Secret Service and all that.
That's what I mean. Kind of makes me nervous when I get on the phone with those
talking
guys.
Talking to the government.
Yes, sir.
Bill's a good guy. Bill's a good guy.
Yes. So that's kind of cool. So. Rick, take a break. We'll be right back here on Real Racing USA.
Come on and play.
What are you doing there? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We're still on.
Okay.
And then we just keep rolling along. See, they do that to me on purpose.
What year did he win the championship?
I don't know.
1994.
Bobby,
you know one thing that sticks in my mind about David Green is that after he won that championship and the Busch come out with that commercial talking about all the young guns, mm-hmm.
and it said, talking about how he was the last one. He said, "I've got something. I got one more thing to do," or something
That's
like
right.
that. And he shuts his shield like he ain't done yet. And I think it sounds like in 2008.
I mean,
you have to look out for Dave Green, the Butcher. He looks like he's going to be after that second championship hard.
Wow.
I mean, I'm here to tell you, you know, he gets ready to go.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Underwear Inspector Number 12.
Mr. Underwear Inspector Number 12.
Whether it be tidy whiteys or banana hammocks, you're the one who makes sure our skivvies cut the mustard.
Riding.
You make sure the door is fastened with secure seams so that the cow doesn't get out of the barn when it shouldn't.
Don't let it out.
Dedicating yourself to a craft others might poo-poo, you can pass every single man on the street and say with pride, "You there, you're wearing my underpants. And no, I don't want them back." So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Eagle Eyes, because we're all glad you've got your hands in our shorts. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, I'm Anthony Campy, driver of the number 81 Waterside Realty Royalties Fast Truck, and you're listening to Real Racing USA.
A new concept in driver and team promotion has begun.
McAllister Sports Management and Carnac.com have combined to bring you the ultimate in motorsports marketing. Nothing beats winning, but it does nothing for you or your team if not promoted to the correct group of individuals. Together, Jack Smith and Scott McAllister have over 35 years' experience in the Florida racing industry and have developed a program to meet all your marketing needs, including custom design websites, professional and prompt press releases, audio-visual presentations and distribution, autograph cards, logo design, and media skills development. Achieve the exposure you need to catch the attention of potential sponsors and race team owners in a unique and professional style. No stale websites or cookie-cutter press releases. We analyze your needs and tailor each project and program to your specific goals. Call 352-804-0078 or log on to McAllisterSportsManagement.com or Carnac.com for more information.
All right, we're back at the Smith River Grill with our tribute to P-Door, David Green. What a race car driver, man. We got a hell of a race car driver on the phone with us right now.
He kept name-dropping this guy.
Name-dropping this guy.
Mike Hope, didn't he?
Mike, how you doing tonight, brother?
Pretty good. How about you?
All right, we're doing real good.
Mike Hope. Mike, Bobby Orr.
Hey, Bobby, what's happening, man?
How you doing, man? You doing good?
We're still here in the shop working as usual where you should be.
I hear you. Well, I'll be on the way to your shop after this show's over then. How about that?
That works for me. Come on, we'll still be here.
All right. How's things going for you guys?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We're trying to make a decision on Ford or Chevrolet for an ASA deal and just stuff like that. But other than that, everything's going good. We've got new cars here in the shop and just working working, man.
Good deal. Are y'all going to either races this weekend? Speed World is a limited race and the Saturday Night Sunbelt race?
No, we're going to cut back our schedule on the fast car stuff and run some selected stuff, bigger 200 lap races, and we'll still run a couple of Goodyear races, and we're heading for South Georgia or something like that in June with the ASA car, and finish out the ASA season, running the rest of their stuff.
Great series, man. Great series.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad deal. I mean, I'm not a big crate motor fan. I'm a spec motor fan, but I'm going to have to learn to be a crate motor fan until everybody comes around to who's their way of thinking. So.
Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, I'm putting stuff together here.
That's all right.
Mike, we had just had David Green on. You know, he had a lot to say about P-Door, had a lot to say about you. What are your fondest memories of Pete?
Oh, man, he's just a... And to Pete, to me, was a technical competitor. I mean, and that's pretty much the type driving style and whatnot that I've got. I mean, we may not always had the fastest race car at the racetrack, but it was well prepared and was as well thought out. You know, as I said, Pete was a technical racer who the largest compliment I was ever paid by somebody was Pete that we'd ran some all pro races And he had came with David Russell and ran some stuff. And he said, you know, I ran about, I don't know, 10 or 15 of these things. And he says, you know, when you fall off the truck, you're always pretty dang decent. And he says, I just, you know, that is so cool to be that way, you know. And to be, for Pete Orr to tell that to me, I felt that it's a very large compliment.
He also talked to Mike about Scott McAllister. He talked a little bit about the All-Pro days and the Slim Jim series way back when. And, you know, that's when there were some pretty stout names running in that series. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, there was, you know, Jody Ridley, Bobby Gill, Freddie Query.
Those are some tough names, man.
I mean, it just goes on and on. You can, there was big names back then, and you know, there was some stiff competition, and to win races and run up front, that was a, you know, it was a cool thing to do. And I had mentioned before that we're heading to, you know, to run ASA races, and I think that running all pro back in those days was as tough a racing as there was anywhere in the country. And you know, whenever you went there and come home, you know, with a top five, we considered it doing damn good. And
I mean, that series was really competitive back then. It was tough.
Oh, that was. I mean, they talk about, you know, fields being covered by 2/10. I mean, that there's no doubt. And we ran back then. There was, you know, 28 to 38 cars would show up for an event, and we ran 26 events in a year. It wasn't this 10 race,
right?
You know, 19 cars showing up. You know, it was real racing, and to do it out of Florida, as Pete would, you know, was you know, well known for doing, it wasn't easy. And whenever we left Florida, we had 8 hours to, you know, to travel to get to where the heck we was going, and most of those guys were in their backyard, so it was a challenge, but we had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, back in the day, Mike, when you and Pete and Dickie and all them traveling around the state of Florida, y'all had it down.
Not me as much as those guys. I mean, I left around 1990 and started touring with NASCAR at the All American Challenge Series. That's where I met David Green and Jeff and that, and then Pete come on after, you know, after that, because he was here with, you know, and did a lot of stuff with David Russell and whatnot. But it was, yeah, it was still. When I did race here in Florida early on, it was tough. I grew up racing with Dave Brakefield, Dave Scarborough, Dave Fletcher, Jimmy Cope, Pete Orr, all those guys. Whenever I first got into late model, those guys had been in them for a while, and so I went to the big time school of hard knocks, so to speak, and I learned a lot from it.
Yeah, you can learn a lot. I'm sure. I mean, that's the learning curve must have been really shortened when you get to deal with people like Pete Orr. I mean, that's got to really help you out when he comes over and tells you about this track or this setup or how to run these kind of cars or this type of series or how this track works. It's got to be a real help, you know, to everybody. And that's, of course, what Pete was known for.
Well, I'm going to give you a little known fact. I was the first time I ever went to Winchester. I went up there and had pro shocks on the car and all this whatnot, and you know, and I got there and pretty much ran like crap and ended up blowing a motor up and fell out. And that was 1993, I believe it was. I went back the next year. I had talked to Pete quite a bit. Started playing with some Penske's, where he got the Penske Pete name. You know, and he I was talking to Pete about Penske's, and I bought an old set of shocks from I don't know who, and I said, listen, build me what you think, you know, we need to take the Winchester and we'll go up there and you know, see what we got. So anyway, make a long story short, he built the shop, sent it to the shop over there at Eagle's Nest where I was racing out of. It was 94. Had to be 93 or 94. Went up to Winchester, won the Winchester 400 the second time I was ever there, and Pete Orr built the shocks for the car. Nobody knows that. Now Bobby knows it because I just forgot about that kind of stuff. But and I still got the same build sheet that he gave me to, you know, to build those shocks, and I won that race three years consecutively with the same exact shocks on the car.
I remember when we were down at Homestead for an all-pro race, and we were struggling a little bit. And the first garage we went to for a little bit of advice was Mike Cope's garage. And I know you and my dad had a very high level of respect for one another. And I don't think you guys ever traded paint on the racetrack one time.
Yeah, I don't remember all that. I don't remember trading paint. I never trade paint with anybody.
Me either.
I think that's what you said. I can't hardly hear you. But, yes, high level of respect is, you know, that's an understatement. You know, again, your dad went through a lot of the same trials and tribulations that I did with getting to the show, so to speak, with the Bush deal and whatnot, and then and getting kicked to the curb, but he wasn't a yes man. He wasn't going to just, you know, lay there and take it. Neither was I. And so, while we were not bad racers, we weren't real politically correct at times, and didn't, you know, we just kind of got screwed, I guess. But that's okay. Can't look back. Got to look forward. And we've had a lot of great, he had a lot of great success after the fact, and so did I. And so I have nothing to, nothing to be ashamed of, and really enjoyed racing, you know, all the years, and especially, you know, the memories I do have with, you know, with Pete.
Absolutely. I can remember a few of those hotel nights on the All-Pro days. We all would get together by a pool party, about two or three different teams, and just tell stories with each other. And it seems like we'd always end up together, a bunch of good times. And like I said, Dad always talked good about you. You know, he had nothing but good things to say and good memories, and you guys had a high level of respect for each other, and he valued that.
Well, no, so did I. And one of the last times I saw your dad was at that July race in New Smyrna. And I went up and talked to him, and he said, "Man, I'm doing good. I think I got this thing whooped." And we BS'd, and we talked about, you know, the old days. And I was thinking to myself, "Ah, dang, we're getting old. You know, here we are reminiscing about, you know, about what we used to do racing, and hell, I was still racing." I wasn't getting old, but that's still cool though. And I got a lot of, like I said, I got a lot of good memories, and your dad and the horsing around deal with the cheerleaders, the poster that you used to hang out, that you hand out, and all that stuff. That
always stuck in everybody's memories pretty good. The magic cheerleaders.
Well, I didn't hear you. I'm stuck.
The cheerleaders always stuck in everybody's mind.
The cheerleaders on that poster always stuck in everybody's mind pretty good from them horsing around days.
Yeah, well, the cars were cool, but the cheerleaders were better. I mean, I wasn't an old man then. I was pretty young, you know. But no, it was a lot of fun. I mean, as I said, we had a great respect for each other on and off the racetrack, and I think that's something that today is it's lost in racing, and people don't work on their stuff as hard as what we did then, and they think they can go out and just buy it, and that's not where it's at. I think that guys like Pete Orr did a whole lot more with a whole lot less than people ever want to realize. And David Green's the same way. His brother Jeff, Bobby Labonte's probably one of the best fabricators I know. They're guys that are hands-on racers, and Pete was a hands-on racer. And I think that's what kids need to be looking towards nowadays and get back into that.
Well, I hope those days come back around, that's for sure, soon enough. But always good to have you on the phone, Mike. We look forward to seeing you back out there along with Travis and those guys. And thanks for coming on Real Racing USA, Real Racing Radio, and remembering Pete Orr.
Man, no problem. And y'all take care, and God bless everybody.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Mike, right, thanks for being on with us, bud.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Cope.
You got it, man. See you guys.
See you.
Man, that's a tough competitor. Hang on one sec. We got a phone call to make real quick, and you guys go right ahead.
Bobby.
Yes, sir.
You know, you grew up in all this. I mean, from a baby all the way up. What was it like?
You just grew up at the racetrack. That was your life. That's all you knew. That's all I know. That's all I've ever done. It was, you know, we were family at the racetrack, and we were family away from the racetrack. But you did everything you did revolved around racing and my father's career. And that was a lifestyle. That's how everyone is when you get wrapped up into a lifestyle of racing. That's just what comes natural to you, and that's all you know. And it really is a good life. Like a lot of people saying, we're sitting here talking about memories, and that's what it does. It gives you a lot of good times and a lot of good memories.
You know, I was going through some of the memories on the scrapbook, and I happened to come across somebody had scanned in a NASCAR approval for Pete Orr that was written way back in the boonies by a gentleman that we have on the phone, former Winston Cup champion, Darrell Walter. Darrell, thank you for coming on Short Track USA.
Yeah, nice to be on the show. It's just a real honor. Thank you very much.
Darrell, we appreciate you being with us tonight, sir.
Yeah.
Bobby Orr here's with us, DW, and once again we're going and talking about some of the memories from Pete Orr, and we came across that, and I decided I had to get in touch with you. Tell me about your experience with Pete, and obviously how you came about to write the letter that actually put Pete in the Busch series.
Yeah, we were, we became buddies. We raced together a little bit down there in Florida, and he was a guy that I love. I call them blue collar racers, and basically, if you're a racer, you know everybody kind of knows what that is. A guy that didn't mind getting his hands dirty. Matter of fact, he loved getting his hands dirty, and also, he loved getting behind the wheel of a something he had worked on, something he had built, and racing around a racetrack. And guys like that have always been heroes of mine. And he was they were gonna give him a shot at what was the guy's name? It had the
David Riddling.
Say again.
David Riddling?
Yeah, Riddling. Couldn't remember his name.
Bobby knows all that now.
Yeah, he's going to drive David's Riddling's car, and they want to give Pete a shot at it, and I highly recommend it that they do. And I don't remember how he did. You guys will have to refresh my memory.
How did he do, Bobby?
His first race was at Darlington, qualified 14th. And I remember very specifically, we were talking about this on the way here, his first race at Daytona, he qualified 10th out of 70 cars, and out of all people giving him advice about 10 minutes before the race starts, I believe you and him were sitting on the wall together.
Yeah, we had known each other, and I knew he was a good driver, and I knew I just felt that, in the right situation, he could have some success at that level, and, gosh, who knows where he could have gone to, I just felt like that was a good opportunity for him, and I tried to encourage him as much as I could, help him, give him much information as I could. When you're a rookie, you can tell them anything you want to.
Don't listen to anything.
You gotta go out there and get it done, and sometimes what you tell them, they end up in situations you say, ooh, I never have seen that happen before.
Exactly.
Right.
But anyway, he was a sweet guy, and everybody liked him, and he was well-respected. And he was a buddy, and, he came to Charlotte, and he helped us some on our cup cars and on our Busch cars. And I don't know. Did he ever move to Charlotte? I can't remember.
Yes, sir. We only moved there when he was Busch racing, but not when he was working with you back in the Mountain Dew 11 car days.
Yeah. I thought he eventually moved to Charlotte and was there for quite a while and made a lot of friends, had a go of it, and that was all you could ask for.
Absolutely.
We had David Green on the phone earlier, and we were talking to him about, really the days that you were talking about, Darryl, of the driver actually doing a lot of the work on his car and knowing it. Those kind of days are they really kind of over, it seems like. You wish they could come back, but and that's when you start remembering people like Pete Orr going, man, he was the guy that really kind of did it all. And those days are kind of over with.
Apparently, these days, they pay you not to work on your car.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. that's what we see even on our level is, where's the driver at? It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. In all honesty, I can recall the last couple, 3 years I drove, and particularly with my own team, we were starting to hire a lot of, guys that are now known as engineers. Mm-hmm. We were just starting to hire guys that knew how to read data and how to run the Pi system and trying to translate that and figure out what it all meant. And literally, you became – your job changed from being a mechanic and working on the car to being a part of that whole computer system.
Exactly.
They would tell you it was the hardest thing. I never adapted to it. I just wasn't made that way. I was kind of like Pete. I like to, do it my way. But they would tell you what the car was doing and what the car was needing, and you just wouldn't, I wasn't up for that. I said, no, time out. I am what's known as a reverse engineer. I'll fix it the way I wanted it, and you tell me tell me what I did.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
I think for a lot of us guys, from my era and back in that day, that felt that very same way. It was very, very difficult to adjust to the new way of racing.
Yeah, when we run across young kids these days that can do that and do like to work on the car and work on it a lot, we know that they're special.
They don't stay here very long. They head up to North Carolina, which is a good thing. And Darryl, we're down here in Bradenton, Florida, the Snook River Grill, which is a really great place to stop down and eat. So the next time you're down this way, you got to make sure you stop in and get you some good seafood down here. It really is good. But we have a driver. You have a driver now that's of course near and dear to us here in the state of Florida, David Rudeman, and David kind of goes right along the same lines as Pete. Really a gentleman on and off the track.
Absolutely,
you're exactly right. I hadn't even thought about that, but there are a lot of similarities there between David and Pete. Both guys coming up through the ranks and working on their own stuff, and David's a Rudeman's a great, he's a good Christian guy, and Pete was too, and I those are just, those guys are far and few between. They're kind of diamonds in the rough. And, that was the exciting thing about Pete getting to move to North Carolina and having a shot at, doing what he wanted to do. No matter what happened or, where, whatever came down the road, at least he can always, and all of us can remember him as someone that did at least get a chance.
And there's so many nowadays that get a chance, and it seems like they don't know they're even getting a chance when they're getting it. So, you know, it's
no, and you know, Pete Steele might not have ended up ideally, but he at least had a shot. And
exactly.
I think that's the thing that you have to be happy for him for.
And he made the most out of it, you know, which is what he always did. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's really special having you on here, DW. You know, I'm not sure if there's any other stories you'd like to get in about Pete, something else you'd like to tell me, but we saw some of that. Like I said, I saw the letter, and I was really impressed, and I thought, man, we got to get in touch with Daryl and see what he's got to say about this.
Well, he had to have somebody, you know, that would recommend him because he didn't have much of a track record at that time other than just around Florida there.
Right.
And since I had raced with him, I knew him personally, you know, Riddling called me up and asked me would I do that, and I did, and I was always so glad that I had the opportunity to help out. And he was, like I said, he was a good guy and a great racer and a good friend. We spent a few years together there racing the old Mountain Dew car and working together down there. A few times I raced in Florida, and then he moved up to North Carolina. So he was a hard worker and a good man, and that's all you can ask for.
Absolutely.
DW, Rick Angie's here. You know, you guys traveled down here to Florida back in the day with the late models and all that. Nowadays, the NASCAR guys just don't have the time like they did back then.
No, you know, it's a shame what's happened to short track racing. You know, it didn't matter where I was racing. If I was racing in Talladega, I'd race in Huntsville on Thursday night. And I might race at Birmingham on Friday night, and I might even drive home and race at Nashville on Saturday night.
Come on.
Before I race up there at Talladega on Sunday.
That's a blue-collar racer.
Yeah, there's a blue-collar brother right there.
Talladega, after the race, and flown back to Owensboro, Kentucky, or somewhere up there where there's a Sunday night race, and run Sunday night. Those were the – and you know what? We used to complain about it, and you say, golly, we didn't have – quality races. We just had quantity races. if you could pick up a couple of $100 from a promoter to come and run, or you know, four or five, whatever it might be, and then you go and you have a decent run and you do that for, you know, five nights. Well, on Monday morning when you sit down to see how you did, you got a grand or two laying there, and that was pretty good money back in, you know, for a short track racer back in the day. I supported my Cup efforts for a long time with my short track racing.
I bet. I'm sure.
That's amazing.
I'm sure.
That is amazing.
I can see how that wouldn't work today. But
that tells
but
you how much he was winning the late model show.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the other neat part about that is, did it all with the same car.
Now, see, that's the scary part.
We had a truck with a service body, like a refrigerator pair, a Maytag salesman would use. With the tire rack on the top of it, on each
side. There you go.
No spare motor, and we had one extra spring. But let me tell you how that worked. So I'm going to go to Huntsville on Thursday night. I had my four springs in the car, and I'd run those four springs at Huntsville, and I'd go on down to BR and run the same setup. Then when I come to Nashville, I took this one extra spring and I put it in the right front. I took my right front spring I had in for Huntsville and Birmingham, put it in the left front, put the left front in the right rear, and the right rear in the left rear. And that's how I raced Nashville. So if I was going to a bank racetrack with a little banking on it, I'd put this one, I'd rotate the springs around. And then if I was going to a flat track, I'd take that big spring out of the right front and rotate them back. And that was our setup.
And I bet you that would still work today.
It worked pretty darn good.
I'm sure it did, you know, and that's what Bobby always tells me. He says, you know, the idea here is to keep it simple, you know, and that's, I bet you that setup would still work today at those same tracks.
Probably so.
So, well, once again, DW, great to have you on. It's a real honor to speak to you about Pete Orr, and good luck to you and everything in the future, and we'll be watching for you guys. Of course, like I said, we're big David Ruderman fan, so we'll be watching out
absolutely
for you guys.
Yeah,
so.
He's done an incredible job. He was I was really disappointed when Michael said they were going to take him out of the truck and put him over in the Cup car, but I knew that's what David was, you know, that's what he was living for.
Exactly. I mean, you know, he deserved that, and of course you knew that going in.
And right now he's carrying the banner for MWR, so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's done a whale of a job for them guys over there.
He has. He's really done well. And the Busch car, and and in the cup car too. So
I think I'd
be back in that truck every once in a while if I could.
I bet you would, but that's right. Okay. Hey, just gives you a chance to get back over there.
I might slide in there somewhere down the road.
There you go. Well, we look forward to seeing you once again. Thanks again for coming on the show. Daryl Waltrip, former Winston Cup NASCAR champion right there. Thanks a lot, Daryl.
Thanks,
Daryl.
All right, thanks a lot, Daryl.
Daryl Waltrip talking about Pete Orr, man. There you go.
Awesome.
Brother, there you go. I mean, he talked about blue-collar driver.
Don't
that
get,
is it.
Don't get no better than that.
I mean, and that's got to say
Bush
something.
Bush Grand National champion.
That's a true class act.
See, you know, Cup the, champion
the,
all
the thing
in the
about
same
it
night.
Is, yeah, I mean, the thing about it is like I said, Bobby grew up. Dude, he was right there. You know,
yeah.
He was right there, and it was all around him, and he remembers that. And
especially
it's just
when we were off Bush racing, I mean, being around it. Just like we walk around the pits here, they walk around the pits there. It's normal to them. People like us see that, and we're like, oh, my gosh, but to them it's normal. So I got
right.
to be in that atmosphere for a while, and I got the best of both worlds. And like you said, the whole racing thing is just a really cool world to grow up in.
Yeah, it really is. Because here with us, John Sapercom.
Yeah.
Hey, come
guys.
On in.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, John?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
John is going glad to have you here on Short Track USA.
I had to track you guys down. I figured I'd come down and say hello.
Come on, man.
Cool.
Always good to have
when
you.
When are you coming down to race with us?
Well, now
close.
I got an invitation, hopefully pretty soon.
Where are you running now?
Well, I got a super late model trying to finish up.
Oh, yeah? Good. Mm-hmm. Come on down.
Absolutely.
You need to come down. If you want to use the track one afternoon, let me know.
John's great. Microphone yeah. on?
Hang on. Hit the mic there.
Yeah, I think it is.
Gen 4.
Well, you got to turn it up a little bit.
It ain't like that tonight.
It ain't like that
tonight. Come on, man. Come on. No.
It's like that every night.
I got a new name now, John Soprano.
That's cool. I like that, man.
Johnny Soprano.
That. You know, we were talking on the way down. It's always about, as a matter of fact, about John John Jr.
Yeah, Little Johnny.
Little Johnny.
Absolutely.
And
I work with him quite a bit now on Mario stuff.
Oh,
we used to work
yeah.
together. Yeah, I really like working with him.
He's a good kid.
Got to know him too much until we worked together at Mario's. I really like working with him.
He's a good kid.
He's
really
a good kid. He's funny.
I've never seen him race, though. I heard he's a heck of a driver, too.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Said he's getting it done down there, so.
Want to take a quick break?
Yeah, actually, we need one of those good long breaks with Evergreen Development. And
well, keep talking for a minute, then.
You know what,
man?
Just, yeah. I had a short one set up, but.
You got a spec motor in your car?
No, I have a 9-to-1 motor.
Bobby's got it close, man. His car is close.
Close.
His,
yeah,
his car is real close, and
down.
I mean, it is sweet.
Absolutely. Definitely.
It's a sweet piece.
All right, we'll take a quick break.
Hi, this is Tate Pierce, the driver of the number 81 Chevy Monte Carlo Tim Brink Underground Special, and we're live on Real Racing USA.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor. Through the miracle of hypoallergenic adhesives, you transform us from mild-mannered accountant into roadhouse biker hooligan. Be it screaming skull or thrashing tiger, you've got a temporary alter ego for any occasion.
Flaming dragon.
What else says, I love you, Mom, like a heart with a sword through it?
You know I love you, Mama.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor Guy. We may not have been born to ride, but thanks to you, we can feel like it.
Thank you, Mr. Fake Tattoo Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Dayton Andrews Dodge is closing out 2006 in racer-friendly style. Dayton Andrews Dodge on the corner of 22nd Avenue and 34th Street in St. Petersburg, just off I-75, is offering great racer specials for the end-of-year savings. Buy now any new or used car, truck, or van at Dayton Andrews Dodge and tell them you heard it here on Short Track America. They'll send $500 of your racer special deal to sprint car driver Greg Leonard and his wife Vera for the David Leonard Foundation. Looking to help racers in need? That's your racer-friendly Dayton Andrews Dodge five-star dealership. Dayton Andrews Dodge, corner of 22nd Avenue, 34th Street North in St. Petersburg. It's the little drive that saves a lot and gives a little more. 727-321-0500, the number to call for Taylor Andrews at Dayton Andrews Dodge. Tell them Short Track America sent you. Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
Welcome back to Real Racing USA. We're just rolling tonight. Champions all over the place. David Green, former Busch Grand National champion. Daryl Waltrip, NASCAR
Winston. Daryl who?
Waltrip.
NASCAR Winston Cup champion. On racing.
Real Racing.
Real Racing USA.
I told you, you can't draw flies.
Can't draw flies here, can we?
You've had a Busch Series champion on tonight. You've had a Winston Cup champion on tonight. You've had probably a Slim, I don't know, but he won a few Slim Jim races. I don't know if he's Slim Jim champion,
but Mike Hope. Yeah.
There you go.
Didn't he win championship?
He's won about every. You go to any track you go to, you see his name up there as a winner, that's for sure.
And now we got the All-American Challenge Series from DeSoto Super Speedway, first champion, Justin Draughty. Justin, how you doing tonight, brother?
Very good. How are y'all doing?
Oh, we're doing great, man. We're rolling here tonight.
Sounds good. Sounds like I got some good guys on there tonight already.
Oh, yeah.
Champion.
That's why we got you following them right after, but we figured we put it right on you.
That's right.
Yeah, we were talking about good guys on the way down here. Bobby and I were driving, and I said, you know, Justin is about one of the best guys I know. He really is, sincerely, one of the best guys I know.
Even Keel.
I mean, even Keel is right, but, you know, it follows right along with Pete. Tell me, you know, we were talking about that. Tell me, Justin, real quick about your memories with Pete and how you guys developed your relationship.
We got it started there. Just before the around 2001 there, he actually bought our very first car from Pete over there when he was at Race Car Engineering, and he's actually the one that got me into super late model racing. So it was kind of a big deal, and actually to hook up with him in 2000 there, in 2001, it was a big deal to get going in the right direction with our super late model program. And like I said there, we got hooked up there in that year, the 2002, when we won the championship over there. Pete was with us the entire time there, and that was our best year we've ever had. Even till this day, it still is our best year we ever had there. I think we had over 7 poles and 7 wins and won the championship that year. So he got us on the right track. He was definitely the key to get me started where I'm at today with racing.
You know, that's what we've heard from everybody so far is the respect that they had for Pete and how he kept people on the right track, like Mike Hope with the shocks, you know, and Daryl Waltrip sitting on the wall, you know, with Pete listening to him, and David Green just.
I think that's why he was so successful is because he had mentors like Daryl Waltrip and David Green. So when it come time to teach to Justin Draughty, he had that experience with him. And I know Justin, you do a whale of a job behind that wheel as a driver yourself, and with a little guidance when you guys hooked up, you had good chemistry together, and you guys were more than just racing partners. You guys were friends also.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, that was a big thing there. I think, like I said, racing-wise there, he taught me a lot of stuff about just driving the cars. And, I mean, yes, I could race a race car, but actually getting around guys, I learned how to finish races. A lot of people don't have, they might have a good car and can win some races, but finishing races there when you're running for points there, he taught me that year when we ran over there at Bradenton for the championship there, how to finish races. And going back to what Bobby said there was, we were more than just a crew chief and driver there. We were good friends. I mean, he was a great guy to hang out with. I just remember going to Pensacola with him, with all the guys there, and had no idea that he was such a pleasure to be around and fun and cut up. And I mean,
Bobby's over here laughing while you're doing this, man. Just so you know,
it was awesome. Like I said, you always see him at the racetrack. It's business when we're at the racetrack. But I mean, as soon as they shut the gate down, we talk about the race that night, and after we leave there, I mean, it's cut up time. I mean, it was
all history after that, wasn't it?
Yeah, you never pictured that way there, but, I mean, he was a great guy to hang out with, even, like I said, away from the racetrack. It was just fun to be around.
Well, I know until every day since he met you guys and every time he worked with you guys, all until his last day, he thought the world of you and your race team and your family, and we really appreciate everything you've done for us as a family.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm just glad I could be help to all the family and everything there, and I'm just glad that he could be around long enough to show me the ropes. I mean, it was a great pleasure to be around him and everything that I have to do with racing.
you know, all the years I've been around racing, and I watched that championship year with you at DeSoto, I don't think I've ever seen a race car driver more focused and just, you know, more attentive to your racing.
Yeah, he definitely is. That year there, I mean, without a doubt, that was the most focused we'd ever been there. Like I said, I'd never raced for points at all there, and he taught me how to, like I said there, that's a hard thing to learn. I mean, it sounds easy, hey, finish a race there, but it was really hard to learn that aspect of it, you know, to try to finish races. I mean, knock the fender off and then get on the radio, hey, listen, calm down, we got to finish the race, you know. I might finish seventh that night there, but it was real important for the points, as you'll see it. I think that year there it came down to one position for the points championship that year. So, I mean, every little thing was a big help there that we finished in those one position, those two positions, you know.
Yeah, and we're here with John Sapercone. He said it came down to you and Jimmy Cope, as a matter of fact. And it's like you said, Pete gave you not only the ideas about how to finish the race, but about how to win the race. I mean, and how to win it in the correct fashion. And we've seen you do that every time after time after time when you do win your races. I mean, it's a good, clean. I mean, you just do a heck of a job out there. You really do.
Yeah, like I said, they're not just finishing races, but winning races there. I mean, it takes a lot there, you know, and not knocking somebody out of the way, but actually just helping them out or whatever, you know. I mean, he taught me a lot as a driver. Like, so there, yes, the cars were really good there, but at the same time, you can have the best race car and not know how to drive it. So, I mean, he taught me a lot about actually learning how to drive.
I didn't get to go to that last Speed World race, but I heard you put on a Pete Orr on him. It was pretty much a Justin Girardi night, and you were out front all night, and everyone was chasing you. Sounds like you got back to your old ways.
Yeah, getting back on track finally. Trying to get back on track at least there, and that was a big direction, the right direction there. Like I said, that was our first race we've won in like 2 years, so that was a big deal to get back on the right track.
Absolutely. That's what you guys used to focus on a lot, and both of you, when you guys spent a lot of time together, you guys stayed on track, and obviously you won races, set on the poles, and won championships together. And like I said before, you weren't just business partners, you were friends, and until his very last day. And I know he thinks the world of you and your family, especially you and your dad and your uncle. You had a lot of good times on the road together racing there.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely the best time I've had at racing, to be honest with you. Like I said, they're not just saying that just because of Pete there, but like I said, I mean, that was obviously our most successful year. And at the same time, when it's successful, it's fun. So it was a great time that year with spending him with every one of the races we went to.
Well, everybody in your family, Rhonda, your dad, Troy, yourself, David, all you guys are class acts. And once again, you know, that's obviously some of that obviously came from Pistol Pete. So we appreciate you having you on, Justin, and look forward to seeing you out there in the future. Wait, tell me where you're going to next.
I'm going to Pensacola in the May 25th, and Mobile, Alabama on May 26th. So we'll be up there next. We're putting a brand-new race car together and actually redoing the old car that I had there. So we're just getting some stuff back in the line there, and we're fixing to have a big run of races here coming up.
You're going up there to try to qualify and do the qualifying thing for the – is that the Blizzard races for
the
Snowball?
Yeah, the Blizzard races there. We're just mainly trying to focus on the Derby there. We're going up there to try to run for those points up there, but at the same time we're trying to main thing is our main goal is to test for the Derby.
Right. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I know, Justin, y'all like that track. It's a lot of fun to go up there too, but we wish you luck, man, and once again, thanks for coming on and talking about Pete, and good luck to you guys up there. Thanks for coming on Real Racing USA.
All right, thanks a lot, Justin.
See you, Justin. Thank you, bud.
Thank you. See you.
Justin Girardi, another champion.
Champion.
Another champion. This is like the night of champions.
You know, and if there's people listening to this show who, and I'm sure there are some people who really didn't know Pete Orr or don't know a lot about him, you can go, if you go to Karnak.com and you go into Florida Stock Car Racing, click on the history section. There's a little link there to Legends. Pete Orr, there's a whole lot of photographs, and there's
that photo gallery you guys have, really, it's really good. It starts out from 1974, from when he has his very first race car, all the way up to when he was winning every race in the state in the early 90s with the Russell Racing gang.
Yeah, and there's some things in there about the Pete Orr Memorial Race and the Sportsmanship Award.
Absolutely.
And that kind of stuff.
And the benefit that Orlando Speed World held for us when he was sick and diagnosed with cancer, we were going through some really tough times, and you got to thank we all have to thank the Fast Car family for all they've done for us with the benefits they did, and then renaming the Orange Blossom, the Pete Orr Memorial, and everything you guys do at Karnak, everything, it's all an effort, and we as a family greatly appreciate it because it's very comforting knowing that our father was such a highly respected guy. To have all this effort put towards his name is really special to us.
I can remember when we went to the Orlando deal. I believe it was it Travis that ran his number that night?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that was Justin.
It was Justin.
30RR.
Yeah. Right, right, right. That was an awesome deal right there.
On the phone with us right now from up in Charlotte. As a matter of fact, Travis Kittleson on the phone with us. Travis, thanks for calling in. I know you've been on hold, man. We've had Daryl Waltrip on the phone, Daryl and David Green and some other people. Remember, and Pete, tell me real quick about your we'll talk a little bit later on about what's going on with you right now, but tell me about your memories with Pete real quick.
His work ethics. I mean, I think that some of the things that stood with me and still stay with me is just how hard he was willing to work, the hours he was willing to put in, and, you know, just when you thought you were actually working hard until you worked with him, you realize that there's so much more you could be doing and another gear you could be grabbing, so to speak. And just the way he embraced life, he always had a joke or something, a funny CD in his truck to listen to,
Yeah, he did.
He'd go out to lunch, and on the way back from lunch, he'd always have to stop off at Dairy Queen or something to grab a treat. You know, he just enjoyed life. You know, it's not like a... There's one thing that we should all learn from him is just the way he enjoyed life.
You know, it's crazy the things that you remember. All the time you spent with him and all the things you did, the first thing you thought you said on the radio was we went to Dairy Queen and stuff like that. So, it just goes to show it was more than just a racing relationship that you had there. It was a real relationship.
Yeah. I mean, you spent so much time together. And, I mean, in such a short period of time, you work together for 12, 14, 16-hour days sometimes. And, there was a long stretch where we raced Friday and Saturday night for, a few months, every Friday and Saturday night. And, I mean, you spend in what a normal friendship you can do, in a year is probably equivalent to a five-year regular friendship. You know what I'm saying? Just the amount of time that you spend together and the type of time that you spend together, the emotions, the ups, the downs, the wins, the losses, the heartbreak.
Right.
It's the things you experience that just puts you on a whole nother emotional level with that person.
Travis, you raced in the Pete Orr Memorial a few times.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like when you a year and a half ago?
It was, you're talking about when we won?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a year ago. I'm trying to think. Yeah. I tell you what, it was awesome because I came close to winning it the year before, I believe, and come up a little short, and I think we broke the year before maybe. I was so excited. At first, I thought my motor was coming apart. It was vibrating like all crazy, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I was like, there's no way we're going to make it. And I'm like, come on, I'm like, Pete, if you're listening, help me out, And, we ended up winning. And I was so pumped about winning that race. I think Bobby might have been even the one. He was like, man.
I come down there to congratulate you, and you picked me up off the ground, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
You come congratulated me about winning the championship. I totally forgot about the championship. I was so pumped about winning the Pete Orr race finally. And, it just felt so good to be able to honor him and have that trophy and the helmet and everything. It's awesome.
I know it really means a lot to us, too, as a family. It's nice to watch the people who have been either a student or someone that he raced with for years and years and really have a true appreciation for, everything that everyone always talks about, the respect level. And I know that with the relationship you guys and how much you work together and the things you accomplished together, and I don't think I'm out of line by saying this, he got your career started and on the right path.
Oh, yeah.
I think you guys were great together the whole time you guys were together and then some.
Yeah, we definitely were a good pair. I think that, we learned a lot from each other and, me and from him, and probably him dealing with a little brat kid. he probably got a chance to learn a little patience, but I could tell you the one thing that probably for the rest of my life, and I use it today when I work with younger people, I remember I was drilling a body off a car he wanted me to drill off before he got to the shop, and I did, and
you know how the rivets get all jammed up on the drill bit. Well, I thought I'd be a tough guy and try to pull the rivets, rivet nails or the washers off the drill bit by hand and spun it, and it cut my hand all up. And he said, boy, if you're going to be stupid, you better be tough.
That still happens today, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Well, Travis, I tell you, you know, obviously you talked about Pete looking down on you. He would be really proud of you, especially I got the press release the other day that you're going to get to run the Morgan Dollar Motorsport.
Yeah, man, congratulations on your ride. That's awesome.
I appreciate that, guys. Thanks.
So tell me about that, man. You're going to Kansas, obviously your first deal there, but tell me about the whole deal and what you got going on with that.
Me and Morgan Dollar, David Dollar, rather, we've been talking for a while. I was involved in a Chevrolet test with them a few years back, and, you know, I think I fared out pretty well, definitely top three, and, you know, ever since then we've been talking, and, you know, it's all about, you know, they got to have funding to run these deals, and we sold our truck and trailer, our Bush car or our late model. And, you know, what Bob Steele's been able to help us out with, we got a package put together and we're going to go to Kansas. We're going to do a race by race. Hopefully, we'll see, you know, where it goes from here, but, we're definitely going to Kansas. I'm excited as all can be. You know, they got a really good track record at that place.
We're excited for you too, man. Absolutely. We're excited to see that Bob Steele thing. Bob Steele Chevrolet out there is going to be kind of. It's going to be really cool. You know, we always pull for you.
We know it's Travis.
Right? It's 10-4. You know, and that's a good thing. But, you know, we were talking about, you know, the things that. What about any Busch Series news coming up?
We're working on some stuff right now. I don't have anything completely finalized, but there should be some Busch stuff in the future.
Good deal. Yeah. And as we were talking, like I said, with Mike Cope and some other guys, and you really are kind of – I use you as an example to a lot of kids that nowadays they come up, Travis, and they think, shoot, man, I've won at this track and I've won at that track, and I guess I'll just head on up to Charlotte and get me a cup car. You're kind of just like Pete, that blue-collar worker, that man you have to keep digging, you got to keep plugging. And when you do, things like the Morgan Dollar Motorsports deal comes along for you. But, you know, you're just like Pete. You paid your dues. You paid really, really hard, and now it's paying off for you finally.
Yeah, it's nobody's ever going to give it to you, and nobody's going to do it for you. There's
they all have to work hard, whether they know it or not.
I tell them that, man. I use you as an example. I said, dude, he's up there working like a crazy man.
Yeah, my dad talked to me one time, and back in 2003, he was like, you know, I really think you need to go walk the pit, stuff like that, and try to, you know, introduce yourself to these guys. And, you know, I'm completely starstruck when I'm first out there, but. Ever since 2003, yeah, you know, sometimes I have to get after me. I might not want to go one weekend, but, you know, I go walk the pits, and I got more laps in the infield for these tracks than most of these guys do out
there
on the
go.
Track.
I've
got up the courage and, you know, sucked it up and went and introduced myself to Richard Childress. I've, you know, went out and talked to Jack Roush. I've went out and talked to a bunch of car owners. It's just one thing I've learned is no, don't hurt as bad as it sounds. So,
I mean, they're not going to slap you down or nothing like that. Yeah, so, you know,
they're not
I mean,
going to beat you. It hasn't happened to me yet, but I'm
all right. That's all right. You keep trying. Sooner or later, that'll happen. But you know what? That just means you're doing your job. Because if you don't get that, then you're probably not trying hard enough. So, yeah. Travis,
you know that Dad would be proud of you there for accomplishing all you're doing and moving up the ladder like you're doing. You're doing a terrific job, and you know he would wish the best for you. And I don't believe you're making him proud by every move you make.
I appreciate that, guys. That means a lot.
Travis, are we watching for you, bro?
Good luck, right, Travis.
Good luck, buddy. Take care.
Number 46, Bob Steele Chevrolet.
There you go.
See you in Kansas.
Keep digging, baby. Keep digging. We'll be watching for you, man. Good
rock
luck.
Rock and roll, Travis.
See you, Travis.
Travis Kittleson, man. He ain't kidding. He's a good guy.
You know, it amazes me how Pete's footsteps are still going.
You know, like, if you look at that last Gong show, you look at how many people were in it. Travis Kittleson, Jason Boyd, Pete Shepard III. And you just name a handful of guys right off of a reality TV show that my dad has instructed at one time or another.
Exactly, man. I mean, you know, his footsteps are still in NASCAR. His footsteps are still here, local. It's amazing. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, last year, you know, when Bobby Sears, we presented Bobby Sears with the Fedor Sportsmanship Award. His reaction and his emotions to that
were incredible.
Oh, I mean, it
I
was
could
a
tell
story,
talking to him. And Bobby helped me tremendously when I raced the mini stock for a couple years with Rick Bristol's car and won the championship and won Rookie of the Year and numerous races there at Orlando Speed World. And he really helped us out a lot. So we grew a relationship with Bobby Sears that was pretty fond of each other. And I knew when he got that award that and even just standing there getting our picture made together, he really appreciated it, and it meant
it
was a real honor for him.
It certainly was.
And it should be for anybody who receives a PDOR award. That's a very prestigious award.
Well, you know, after when your dad got sick and you had the problems with the insurance and then when it was all over, there was a guy who's a used to own a racetrack in Florida. Races still when he gets a chance. Went a long, long extra mile to try to do something about the insurance problem. And State Senator Bill Posey is on the line with us. How you doing, Bill?
Great. How y'all doing?
We're doing wonderful. We've had quite a few. We've had a lot of the guys you know, Travis Kittleson and Justin Draughty, and we had David Green on, and even D.W. joined us for a while, so it's been quite a night.
Oh, that's neat. That's really neat.
Yeah. So when we spoke the other day, you said that just tell us give us a little bit of a rundown for people who don't know what happened with the insurance and all of that.
Well, in 2001, right after 9/11, I had the governor come to New Smyrna for the Governor's Cup, as you probably remember. And we were in the grandstands, and I was with the governor, and somebody came up and was talking to me like I should know him. But I didn't recognize the person, but I was cordial and acted like I knew him and introduced him to the governor. Hi, this is my friend, but I didn't say a name. And they shook hands and whatever. And so when the guy walked away, I asked somebody, I said, hey, who the heck was that? And they said, well, that was Pete Orr. That wasn't Pete Orr. You know, this guy was kind of emaciated, you know, kind of drawn, had a little red stocking cap and a red jacket. And, you know, Pete Orr is big and stocky. And I said, no, that wasn't Pete Orr. Who was it? And they said, that was Pete Orr. I said, that wasn't Pete Orr. And so anyway, they said, yeah, he's sick. I said, oh, my goodness. So I ran down to the bottom of the stands and ran him down. I said, Pete, I'm so sorry that I didn't recognize you. You know, I didn't know that you were sick. You know, what's wrong? He said, well, I got cancer. And I said, well, are you getting treatment? He said, well, I was getting treatment. He said, except my insurance company wouldn't pay any of the bills. And so they ran out of room for me at the MD Anderson Cancer Center. I said, uh-oh. I said, look, here, take my card with the number on it, call me in the Capitol, and give me the name and policy number of your insurance company. So he did. So the next day I called the insurance commissioner's office and said, listen, so I got a friend that's having big problems here, and I want you to find out why his insurance company's not paying his bills. And in the meantime, I called Lee Moffitt, former House Speaker, who the Lee Moffitt Cancer Center is named after, and I got Pete admitted there on a lifetime payment plan. They didn't take any cash. They made provisions to get Pete in immediately and found space for Pete. So the insurance commissioner's office came back to me in a few days, and they said, hey, he said, we found out about the company. The name of the company is TRG. And there's nothing we can do about it. That they come under ERISA, which is a federal law, and states can't regulate them. So, you know, we have about 12 companies in the state operating like that. They take people's money, but they don't pay their claims, and there's nothing we can do about it. I said, well, we're going to do something about this one. They said, well, no, we can't really. I said, okay. So they left, and I filed a budget amendment to abolish 72 of their jobs in the Department of Insurance. Well, you know, a day later, they come roaring in there and say, hey, do we have a problem? I go, yeah, we got a problem. So what's the problem? So you're not worth the power to blow your you-know-what out this door, and so I'm going to get rid of you and get somebody that will prosecute these criminals. And so to make a long story short, they said, even if we did something, we could never get these people extradited from another state. I mean, this is a white-collar crime. And I said, listen, if they don't do their job in Indiana where these guys are based, that's their problem. If we don't do our job in Florida for guys like Pete Orr, then that's our problem. So they got indictments against these guys, and they busted the first one about 2 weeks later. As a matter of fact, Terry was in town when the news came out that they busted these guys in Indiana. And these two guys that ran this insurance company, they wrote business in 49 states. Every state except Indiana, which is their home state, and thought they would never get caught. So things changed because Pete Orr and 11 law enforcement agencies cooperated in busting these guys. And when they handcuffed the first guy and carried him away in the back of the car, his wife is screaming, "You said they'd never cross state lines to prosecute you. You promised me." So they ended up getting the other guy, too. And both of them, a year before last, entered federal penitentiary, one for 4 years, one for 6 years. And the law that we passed to make this type of racketeering illegal in Florida, we named after Pete, is called the Pete Orr Insurance Anti-Fraud Act. And as a result, when there was like 12 or 14 companies that were doing that in the state, you know how many of them defraud people in the state now in their health insurance?
Zero.
About not many.
None. Because they know what's going to happen because of Pete Orr. The bad guys go to prison, and nobody is doing that. We don't have a problem with a single health insurance company not paying their premiums.
Well, Mr. Posey, that's one thing that we look at is, you know, it's unfortunate what happened to my dad and his passing and all. We have to look at the positive things, and if what has happened to him with this whole insurance deal, if that gave you guys the ability to go out and fix something that needed to be fixed for somebody else later down the line so that they don't have to go through the same scenario, then, you know, that's where we got to look at the positive outlook on things of what has happened.
That's part of his legacy. I mean, there's untold people who will benefit from the justice that was gained because of his sickness.
It's a tough thing, but that's what Bobby and I were talking about a couple days ago, is that, hey, you know, if it's how many people's lives that Pete touched, now we see not only in racing, but kind of goes on
in life
in general. I mean, it continues on.
Yeah, for forever. I mean, it put a stop to a type of criminal activity that people had gotten away with for decades, and the buck stopped when they tried to screw Pete and Jerry.
I just think it's amazing that once again that people that once again never know who Pete or is or what he did will benefit, you know, somewhere down the line by that law being passed and by that type of you know, action being taken against those type of people.
Just as David Green was talking about and DW was talking about, you know, it's amazing too, the people that come together or came out to help in one way or the other. Pretty amazing.
Our whole family is very thankful for each and every person that gave us help and kept us in their prayers the whole time we were going through all of our horrible times dealing with my dad's illness, and people like Mr. Posey there who went way out of his way and way far and beyond of anything he ever had to do, but he did a good deed, and it not only gives us as much justice as, you know, as you could get out of a situation like that. Like I said before, hopefully it'll keep other people from having to deal with the same situation.
Amen.
And, you know, Bill Posey's quite a guy, too. I've got to tell you.
I've got to meet him a couple times. You told me a lot about him before I got to meet him. And I mean,
yeah, I remember the first time that we had Pete Orr on our show was, I mean, Bill Posey on our show was in 2000. And Rick was a little intimidated. He didn't want to pick up the mic. He didn't want to talk to you. But times have changed a little bit. I mean, what you've done to bring the governor to the Governor's Cup, and you've been very instrumental in revitalizing that race and making it a very big deal, Bill. And that's a cool thing too.
Well, it's good to do with a great group of people, you know, and it's fun working with you guys. You know, I like even what you're doing to honor Pete. You know, I hope that people won't ever forget who he was and the good that he did. I mean, I remember when Pete was starting to race at New Smyrna in the Super Late, you know, and he wasn't the quickest guy out there for a while, you know. But he's the one guy that I never saw put a bumper on anybody, you know. I mean, everybody gets frustrated every now and then. Everybody gets in too big a hurry. And, of course, since the days of Earnhardt, everybody's an Earnhardt intimidator wannabe, but you know, Pete put the thing on the outside. If he couldn't go around on the outside, he finished second, you know. And there just wasn't a cleaner, fairer, square driver than Pete Orr. And that's because of people who have the personal characteristics and the qualities of Pete that you want to go the extra mile to help people like that. You know, it's not a job. You want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, to earn that much respect from just being the person that you are. That's what Pete
did. Those days are kind of over with. You know, nowadays people are, you know, they,
to intimidate or
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
or copy somebody else or whatever.
He is exactly what he was, you know. That
Pete was definitely one of a kind, no doubt.
Did you spend a lot of time with Pete Orr before that incident happened, or?
No, actually, we were in session when that was all coming to a head, you know, and we were spending time in committee meetings or in session just the way that things fell. You know, session starts just about the time of the Governor's Cup. And so I was away pretty distant. We talked on the phone a few times and you know, kind of kept in touch like that, but I just wasn't home enough, you know, to have much FaceTime with anybody, as I haven't been for the past 3 months, so.
Right. So people will get a chance to see you out at you would go race in Orlando a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, I did. I think the last time I raced in November, it was the last race of the year they had for the classic cars over there.
Yeah.
We'll have to get Bobby on the pit box for you out there, make some calls for you one night over at Orlando Speed World, since that's his home track.
Sure. For sure.
Mr. Posey, we really appreciate everything you've done for our family and all the hard work and extra activity that you did for us to bring all that to justice for us. We really do appreciate that a great deal.
Well, it's a pleasure, Bobby. I'm honored and humbled by the opportunity to do it.
And did you have something else?
No, that's after that, there's not much left to say.
Bill, we really appreciate you taking the time. We know you have a very busy schedule. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend a few minutes with us tonight.
Keep on keeping on, guys.
See ya.
Thank you, Mr. Pale.
Right. Bye-bye.
Awesome, man. Take a break. All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, I'm Wayne Jefferson, driver of the number 1 Open Wheel Modified and number 94 Super Late Model. And you are listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Underwear Inspector number 12.
Mr. Underwear Inspector number 12.
Whether it be tidy whiteys or banana hammocks, you're the one who makes sure our skivvies cut the mustard.
Riding high.
You make sure the door is fastened with secure seams so that the cow doesn't get out of the barn when it shouldn't.
Don't let it out.
Dedicating yourself to a craft others might poo-poo, you can pass every single man on the street and say with pride, "You there, you're wearing my underpants."
Oh, yeah.
And no, I don't want them back. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Eagle Eyes, because we're all glad you've got your hands in our shorts. Bud Light Beer.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company Late Model and Open Wheel Modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. Evergreen.
Real Racing USA. Camille was out of service there for a little while.
Yes, she was.
But she's back at
it.
Hey,
I'm going to tell you what, man. The last 5 years,
uh-huh,
there's nobody in this state that's mellowed more than John.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean,
no doubt. I've worked for him for the last 5 years.
Were you responsible for this?
No, I'm not taking any credit for anything.
He wouldn't like that when I worked for him, man. What's up with that?
You
wasn't like that when I started either, let me tell you. It still gets pretty tense sometimes. But you know what? Tonight, all I can say is, wow, man. Unbelievable.
I mean, the stories keep going on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
It's from some people that, I mean.
Oh, this could be a six-hour show in a heartbeat, you know, if this place was open.
Well, like Bobby said, if we get the moonshine, break it out in the corner, get all these guys gathered down, we'd
be
here.
We had DW telling stories earlier from the old days.
Ain't no doubt.
We'd be here for days.
No doubt.
And I'd stay. I'd stay.
We really appreciate everyone taking all the time to be with us tonight. We have a lot of highly respected names on with us tonight.
Well, you know, we really appreciate you being here, Bobby.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I appreciate you guys for having me. I appreciate you guys for taking the time and devotion to talk about the memories that that my father has impacted on the racing community locally, nationally. And then we got into how they affected other people's lives and even still today, like we just talked about with Mr. Posey. So we really appreciate all the things you guys do at Karnak and at Fast Car and Mr. Sapricone. We have memories all over the racing world.
Yeah, well, this guy here, you know, this guy here is probably as much responsible for Karnak as anybody because he gave me the motivation to do all this. I met B.J. McLeod when he was like 13 years old racing. Yep. He was his first time I ever saw him. He was racing a baby late model, baby grand.
That's the first time I saw him.
First time somebody said, that kid's only 13 years old. I said, you're full of it. You know, so I went back and met him and his family, and he was working with Pete then. And B.J. McLeod, how you doing, man?
All right, how you doing?
We're doing great.
Yeah, having a good night.
Yeah, well, have you been listening?
No, I haven't. I'm underneath Schofield's car right now.
Well, you got to get him straightened out.
We feel for you. You missed D.W. D.W. stopped in for a few minutes and spent about 15 minutes with us telling the story.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Daryl on, and we had David Green on, and, of course, we had Mike Cope on tell some stories, and Justin Draughty, and Travis Kittleson was on. So now we want to hear some of your stories about old Pete and what comes to your mind. Bobby's here with us as well, so tell us about some of your experiences.
He might have been too young to remember
I doubt that, you know, somehow, but just tell me a little bit about your experiences with Pete, BJ.
He helped me a ton. We basically, when I started, my dad had been running Super Late models back. He started like 89, and I didn't start till 97. I think I started driving them. And we had a good car. You know, his dad had been running it, had Harold Cannon and a few other drivers in it, got it good. You know, I ran good my first two races, and then I crashed it. And I didn't have the sense or knew what I needed to have a good car again. So dad went to Pete, and he got Pete to get in there and set it up for me. And once he got it set up, then he put me in it, you know, said, this is what you need. He worked with me for, I don't know how, forever, I guess, until he passed away. And it was weird. And, I mean, I remember I was sitting in the shop one day, and I was looking, and I was like, I need to call him real quick. And I looked over there, and I was like, I can't call him.
Yeah.
Because I needed something. It's weird because he was just, you know, he was like a brother or something, you know.
He always used to tell me when he couldn't always go to the racetrack with me when I was racing, but he used to tell me he was a phone call away at always. And I experienced that same thing. That next time I was practicing at the racetrack, and I literally picked up the phone to go call him, and he wasn't there. And you just can't make that phone call no more.
Like 6 months for me. I think it was like 6 months afterwards, and I was sitting there. You know, I had one of the hoods hung up that had the Pete Orr Winter Circle on it that I ran for him back when he started his school. And I had that hung up on the wall, and I always looked at it to get his number, call him. And I looked up there and got the number and went to call it, and I was like, I can't call him anymore, you know, what do I do? And, I mean, he helped me a bunch driving and, you know, learning setup and, you know, he helped develop me a lot because he got with me when I didn't even know what tire stagger was. All I knew was that to get it as hard as I can. And that's what I did. I just drove as hard as I could. And, you know, Pete always had it ready for me. And I just got in and drove. And, I mean, he helped turn me in from somebody that's just sitting in the seat to somebody that knows how to do all of it. And I wouldn't know what to do without what he had done for me.
I remember we first got hooked up with BJ. BJ, how old were you? 15 when I was working with you?
When you were working with me, I think you were 15. Or I was 15.
You were 15. I was like 11.
I had just turned 14 when your dad started it with me. Actually, I was still 13. And we went up to New Smyrna, and he's like, there's no way that kid's 13. And dad said, I'll show you the birth certificate. And I was or Bub, whatever. He was the same way. He said, there ain't no way.
Yeah, I remember that. We had a lot of good times at work. We two track championships in Orlando, New Smyrna,
at age 14,
age 14 in 1 year.
Yeah, counting the winter series stuff. I won winter series in Orlando and New Smyrna, and then I won the overall or the year's championship in Orlando and New Smyrna, and I won combined, so it was five in 1 year. And also, I think I had rookie at one of them because I ran too many races at the other one.
Right,
I won 22 races that year and had 11 poles.
I remember that. Dad was the mentor, Charlie was the crew chief, and I was the tire guy.
And you know, it's funny, too, because these days it's not uncommon for 14-year-olds to be out there doing something.
Right. Oh, no.
But ain't none of them doing what BJ did at his age.
No doubt.
No doubt.
And that was really kind of like the first time I'd ever seen a young, you know, like you say, you right. see that all the time, but that was the first real young driver that I ever saw that was actually getting it done. Now you see kids in there doing
it. Finishing 15th.
Exactly. I mean, but, you know, BJ was in there actually winning races. So, no, he turned a lot of heads and still does. And it's like I said, it's those thoughts and memories of Pete that really mean a lot. I'm sure that he can't drive you on.
I remember in the BJ. Do you remember in the it was the 1998 Governor's Cup.
Cup. You're gonna say, I know that.
tell us about that little deal.
Oh yeah, that was a fun race. I think I went to the back 3 or 4 times for getting into it with people. I mean, I remember I was past 20th back.
Okay. You know why? Because he knocked out David Ruderman.
Get him! Get him, baby!
I turned him, and when I instead of going around him, I pushed him because I was mad at him. I shot him a bird while he was going down the front steps. I was pushing him. I shot him a bird. He's looking at me dumbfounded.
he already didn't know what that was. What's that he's doing?
I said, you ain't going to kill me? And he's like, no, you know, because he's always real good-spirited. And I said, man, I was just messing with you. I wasn't really mad. I just thought I'd shoot your bird because you threw your hands up at me. But he had caught me. He had turned down on me the first lap of the race. He just, I don't know if the spotter called him clear or what, but he hit my right front and knocked my toe out, and I was mad. Then when he backed up to me, I got under him again, and he started to come down, and I just said, oh, well, I'm out of the race anyway. And when I got stopped after that crash, it was like, your wheels are still straight. I said, all right, well, we come in and ripped a couple of fenders off. And I went back out, I started 20th, drove my way back to third, crashed David Russell.
Come on.
Oh, absolutely.
Getting them all, BJ. Yeah,
take them out.
BJ, not lightly either. That one needed 2 records.
That's right. Come on. BJ and Pete Orr.
Turned him around, and then once we got done with him, I went back to the back, went back to the front again. I think I finished second that night. I was going down bigly.
At 15 years old, I believe if he'd had 2 more laps, he would have won the Governor's.
You finished second with Pete chasing you down.
Oh, yeah. Pete was right on my butt.
That's right.
Yeah. See, that shows that's big. I mean, that's
giving me too much of a hard time.
Oh, it was crazy race because, you know, if I'm not mistaken, David Rogers had been a lap down and won the race.
I don't know if he didn't win.
Oh no, that was the big. That was the your Bigley one. That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah,
Billy, another Billy good guy. Another good guy.
The 59 car nowadays. It was a 12 then. But.
Yeah, that's right. Billy Bigley.
Tom Lighting's car.
Tom Lighting's car. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that was a fun night. That was.
Well,
fun.
Those are some good old memories, BJ. And really, that's what we're doing here tonight. You know, everybody's sad. Everybody gets sad sometimes. You say you want to pick up the phone and see Pete's, you know, smiling face. It's like I looked at some of these photos and it brings back a lot of memories, but. You know, nowadays we just have Pete with us all the time, and that's about the only thing that we can do is to know that the good things that he did bring along, and we can carry those things on, and people like yourself can carry them on.
And now you work on cars a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's all I do. I don't care about nothing else anymore. Yeah, all I want to do is work on race cars, work, make money, and then race on the weekend.
There's Pete right there, man. Pete in a nutshell right there.
Hey, did you drive that 07 car last week?
Yeah, I attempted to. I got it, went up there and tested Friday. I went Thursday, blew both motors up, both my cars, one brand new one, one old one, and called Schofield. I was already going to drive it in the 100 lapper. Schofield had called me and asked me to drive it, and I told him, of course I'll drive it, you know. And I called him, and I said, man, I just blew up both my motors. And he said, well, you ain't going home. Call John. And I called John. And he said, yeah, I had a car up here in the morning. So I came down that night. We scaled it, set it up, everything, and went up there. We're running 1730s on 100 lap tires.
Jeez.
That's faster than what I was at Speed Week. And started slowing down a little bit back into practice, and I thought, well, the tires are just getting older, you know. And went out to qualify, and I run a 1770, which I hadn't run a lap that slow since I got there. And then I blew the motor up like the third, fourth lap of the race.
I ain't letting you in my car. I have a blowed up motor.
Yeah. Well, we're putting a new one in it right now. I just left Progressive shop this morning, so.
There you go.
Get it in there. Go at it again. We'll go practice again all day Friday.
It is what it is. You got to keep digging. And you know, that's what BJ McLeod and your whole group is about, man. Y'all just keep on keeping on.
I won't quit. I'm going to keep going until I'm done.
You know, I remember the first show. I remember the first show that we ever did. We had your parents on.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, down at the old
restaurant. Well, actually, we had We had
the Pier Restaurant.
Don Rome.
Mm-hmm.
We had B.J. McLeod. That's we had right. Pete Orr.
Yep.
And Travis Kittleson all
as a matter of fact, there's a very short, there's a four-minute clip on the website.
I've seen that on
yep.
of Pete's deal. B.J., let me ask you a question here. Do you feel that – do you think you're going to be able to get in a position where you go back and you're going to win some big races here in Florida?
No, that's what I'm trying to do now. Kittleson taught me – so much in the last since he started helping me in July, and since then I've learned so much on these race cars. It isn't funny about learning what I need in the car and learning the feel of them. And you know, it's funny that I've drove them for 10 years, and I mean, I've won a lot of stuff. I've got in between 70 and 80 feature wins, and I've done all this stuff. And just in the last 6 to 8 months, have I learned to go to the racetrack in any car I get in, I can make it 50 and be quick. And that's what he's taught me over the last 6 to 8 months. And that's what I'm working towards. I mean, I'm trying to get, you know, like Wayne or like Jeff or like Mike Fripp, you know, somebody that can go to the racetrack, drive the car, and set it up and be able to win with it.
Cool.
And that's what I'm working towards. And, I mean, I'm getting there, and I'm not going to quit until I got it, and I'm going to keep working after that to learn new stuff.
I was about to say, man, you it's like I'm learning new stuff. It's like, man, how much more can you learn, Beej? You've been doing this forever. But it's just going to show you can always learn new stuff in this business.
Cars up. And every time you get one set up figured out, you get bored, so you try another one.
Yeah.
And I just keep going, and I've got one that I like right now, but everything else I try, I just don't like. But sooner or later, I'm going to hit something that I like better, and I'm going to go with that. And once I get that the way I want it, I'm going to work on getting something else.
Yeah, and it's kind of like playing golf. You know, it's that one more shot. And that's what Bobby was telling me. He goes, man, I know what I'm going to do the next time out when I go. I got one more idea I want to try, man. It's going to make it just perfect. And it seems like every driver's that way, you know. It's like, man, the next time I go, I know exactly what I need to do.
Yeah, well, that's never the guy. Don told me the other day, he said, let's go eat, you're good enough. I went 14 different times, and I mean, I run 14 or 17:30s with it, so we were pretty decent. Car was real smooth, and he's like, let's go ahead and go, and I said, all right, we're good.
And you're working over at the, you're working with the driving school.
Yeah, that's what I was today.
Cool.
You know,
you having fun with that?
Since I was 19.
Are you having fun with that?
Oh yeah, it's a good time.
Cool.
I love helping people. And, it's a real school. I mean, it really helps you. And I have a good time going and being around people and helping. And it helps me going back, you know, and just more seat time. The more you can be in the seat, the better you'll be.
Cool. All right. The Wachula Warrior, B.J. McLeod.
I love it, man. Wachula.
Oh yeah.
You gotta love that. BJ, it's good to have you on the show, man. We appreciate all your memories of Pete. Well, he just
called
off the phone. He's gone.
He's gone?
You know,
gone, BJ?
Who was that we were talking about?
Yeah,
is
he's
that,
gone.
Who'd you say? Okay. Is that Billy Hess that does that to you? Just hangs up on you? No.
No, there's a few of them. That
do. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. They hang up on me all the time, so I'm used to that. But
all right. So we got a couple of more things here we got to get to, and I think we're going to take a quick break.
It's going to be a quick one.
If we can hit the right button.
Hi, I'm Rob Partolo, driver of the 93 ASA late model, and you're listening to Real Racing USA on Short Track America.
Evergreen Development Construction Company of Tampa is your professional site development leader along the Gulf Coast of Mexico. From tree removal to complete land preparation, Evergreen Development Construction Company prepares your land purchase for complete development, including drainage, utilities, and road construction. One call gets it all. Evergreen Development Construction Company, 813-478-8847. And watch for the Evergreen Development Construction Company late model and open wheel modified at races near you. They're fast, and so is Evergreen Development Construction Company. 813-478-8847.
Evergreen.
Real Racing USA with our special tribute to Pete Orr. We're just rolling tonight, Jack. Special guest, Bobby Orr in the house. Scott McAllister.
It's been great to be here.
I tell you what, Bobby, you impress me, man, on that microphone. You really do.
Thank you.
Bobby knows what he's doing, man.
I'm telling you, man.
Natural.
Yeah, if he don't drive, he could take over for us, right?
Well, maybe he
would want our job, Scott. Who'd want our job, Scott?
Exactly, yeah. It's like, Lee Falk used to tell me, you can't fire a slave. Yeah, I tell you what, on the phone with us now, we've had a lot of great people on the show with us tonight, but none more... more of a great guy than Dave Russell. Dave, it's good to have you on the phone here on Short Track USA.
Thank you.
David, how you doing, buddy? It's Bobby. How you doing?
Hey, all right. How you doing, Bobby?
Good, man. How you guys doing over there at the shop?
Real good. It's your birthday this week, isn't it?
Last Friday.
All right. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, they all knew about it over in Claremont, Bobby's birthday, no doubt about it.
That's one we don't forget. 2-1.
That's right. So you guys ready for this Saturday?
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. Well, we just want, they got a little tribute going on for Dad here tonight. We've had a few people on. I don't know if you've had a chance to be listening. I know you're probably still working at your desk, knowing you, but
I was working out.
That was my second guess.
And you know, there's a lot of people, again, listening who have only maybe, they have no clue who David Russell is. He's the father of Tim Russell.
Right, there you go. I mean, exactly. Right, that they may know.
Now, right
that,
now,
there you some go. Some of our old school people. Yeah.
Tim is tearing up the short tracks now.
Tim's killing them, bro.
Where'd he finish his Lakeland ARCA race? Like seventh or eighth, David?
Six.
And he was digging. He
looked
good.
He was
up
running
there,
top
man.
Five at Daytona, got in a real late Horrible. Accident
yeah,
there
yeah.
that had nothing.
Scary wreck.
If he'd have been 3 inches further, it wouldn't have got him, none of his doing, and he's won 2 out of the 3 Sunbelt races, if I'm not mistaken. He's having an awesome year so far.
You're not proud of your son, are you, David?
Yeah, he's doing good and everything, and every time he gets in that seat, he's getting better and better and just, you know, learning and everything.
How did you get started with Pete?
Well, we used to race down years ago at Hialeah, and we knew each other, not real good, but kind of knew each other as, you know, racers, and then he moved up to Orlando, and came to me one day, I guess he started a shop up there, and so then he came up and started working my automotive shop with me, and then we were doing racing on the side and doing that for our weekends, and how it fell into it, we got, you know, a better relation, more of a family relation going, and I think in 89 I had a real bad wreck, and we had sponsors at the time, so Pete kind of filled my shoes. I was out of commission for a couple months, and he got in the car and started driving it, and then when I got back on my feet in May, the wreck happened in November, and I finally knew who I was in May. We got back out there, and we just ran a two-car team from there.
Well, I remember all them days, all them horsing around days, and all that I remember is trophies. We were in a class act then. It was either who was going to win, you or Dad. It was one or the other. When we all showed up at the racetrack, it was the one of the horse around farm teams normally ended up in victory lane, and that's got to be something that you're proud of to every day of your life.
Yeah, we had, I think, when we moved our race car shop that one time and moved to a bigger place, we had like 1,000 trophies. I think we donated them to Rick Bristol and everything. They were just getting piled up. So there was a lot of memories there, but we had a lot of good days.
You guys won I think, every single big super late model race at least 2 or 3 times. I know you won the Governor's Cup one or twice. Dad won it twice. You won both you guys won the Cracker, the Red Eye. Both you guys won the Orange Blossom. I mean, just about every race New Smyrna's had, both you guys won it, and it was in the era of when you guys were a team.
Yeah, we put our heads together, and then, like, one thing good about old Pete, like, we'd race and then go home Sunday and start working on for next week and try to go faster. Even if we won the race, we tried to figure out how to get faster and better each week.
What was the deal with the horsing around racing? How did that name come about, or what was that about?
Well, we were fortunate. They came in one day and started sponsoring us, and they loved the race, and they only wanted to win. They didn't run second, so they put a lot of pressure on us. But they just liked racing, and they had their own – I guess they were part of Kentucky racetrack up there, their horses. And they were really a race family, and they just kind of always followed us and came with us, and they gave us a big boost.
Oh, so it was a horse farm
it was an
that
actual...
sponsored you guys.
Yeah, well, they raised horses and sold them, and they owned part of Kentucky Downs up there and all the Kentucky horse track up there, but they're really into racing, and they just kind of support us for a while there.
I mean, whether 1 horsepower or 500 horsepower, they were liking racing. That's why I keep telling everybody in Ocala where I'm from, hey, horse racing, car racing, it can go together.
But, you know, I was looking back, Dave, and now obviously there's a lot of teams or there's a lot of people that try to do teams or whatever. You guys, I don't know, but it seems like perhaps y'all were one of the first teams that were a team. Is that right, or were there many teams out there and we just didn't know about it?
No, we actually started and everything, and we always learned, like, my theory was that you got to have the chemistry to win. You know, you can have the best driver in the world, but it takes the driver, the crew, the car, the equipment, and, you know, having all that chemistry will put you in victory lane there.
And you guys were great at putting that package together. Another thing, David, you guys weren't just business partners, and you just weren't, you know, racing buddies. I mean, you guys were true friends at the end of the day, and you got to know that there was a place in his heart for you, and I'm sure there's the same the other way around.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just like when I got hurt, I didn't know who I was, and he was right there for me, and he ran my business, matter of fact, and you know, it was my best friend there, and he just, that's why it fell into it. Like, he started picking up, he knew we had sponsors and commitments, so he started racing the cars, and then we just kind of kept going with two cars and just on and on. And, you know, to this day, we were right there, and I guess when he got that deal for the Busch deal, I mean, that was great, but he got the raw end of that deal because he got the right deal. It's a lot of politics. He would have been winning there right now, but it's just the deal with the crew chief not caring for him made it look better for, like, Kevin LePage and everything, put him right out of the bat. But, I mean, he was very capable of anybody else to win those races there.
Absolutely. And then as soon as the Busch deal got over, if I'm not mistaken, he drove one of your cars at Volusia and run second or third, and I think you won or something like that, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were still friends there. And, you know, and like I say, he came back and right in there, and we worked together, and we had a lot of fun after that.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good. Well, are you guys going to the Sunbelt race this Saturday?
Yeah, we'll be there and everything. As a matter of fact, Thursday night, probably be testing everything. And then,
sounds good.
It's a busy schedule, but, you know, we've got to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like Timmy is going real good with Matt Hagen's deal over there, and it seems like they're really hooked up good, and we're looking for some good things from the ARCA series from Timmy, and same from you as well. So, Dave, it was awesome having you on the show. Really does bring back some old memories, and hopefully you had a good time too, but we certainly do have you. Appreciate you having you on the radio tonight.
No problem. I appreciate it. For any time you need anything, just give a holler.
Thanks, David.
David, thank you, buddy.
Dave.
Okay, thanks.
Dave Russell. I mean, the hits keep coming, brother. It's like Motown.
Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah, well, you know, it's...
David Russell was a big hit for my dad's career. It was unfortunate for David because he got in a terrible accident. You know, he hit his head on the wall. Terrible accident.
Where did that happen?
He really was out of it for a long time. It took him a long recovery, and then my dad was right there running his deal. It was just kind of a, you know, it was a bad deal that turned good. It was an unfortunate situation for David. Luckily, everything turned out okay, and it ended up a great situation for my dad. And that's what turned his career into what it is today. That's what did it all, is David Russell really gave him the opportunity and the chance to do what he could do.
You know, and you can see it in Tim. I mean, Tim's a heck of a race car driver. He's articulate. He doesn't go overboard like a lot of these younger guys.
No flamboyance.
Another person you got to give a lot of credit to there is his crew chief, Cam Gibson. I know Cam very well. He's a great guy. He's a heck of a crew chief. You probably couldn't ask for much of a better in a mentor and a crew chief for Tim. And like David said, his theory is chemistry, and that's what they've got going on right now. Everything that David just said, that what you need to win, is what David has provided for Tim and his team. And look at them. They're having great success. They're leading the Sun Belt points. They've won two out of three races.
When he came to DeSoto 2 years ago in the Limited, he just showed up. And, you know, I mean, everybody's going, who's this? You know, because we got our own series going. And he didn't join the series. He was just racing every race. He won every race that he came down.
Yeah, when he's there, he's definitely a contender, and he certainly, unless something weird happens, he's going to finish up front and in the top five.
And that's the way he's just carrying on the tradition that his dad and my dad had to
quiet confidence.
Pretty much every time that Dave and my dad went to the racetrack, those were two people you had to contend with for the win, and Tim's just carrying that flag on for the team.
And these are people that the new generation of young drivers out there, and I hope some of them are listening, these are the people that you need to look up to and follow because they have shown a way.
Well, I'll tell you one thing in that race shop is hard work and dedication, and it pays off. That's what you got to have. But it takes somebody who will provide that for you in an atmosphere to do it in, and I think that's a Class A race team, and they've really got it going on right now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, when they come to the racetrack, they're there. They're sharp. That ARCA race, you know. But you know, you think like, okay, it's an ARCA race. You know, they're going to show off for the ARCA. But you know, a limited late model race, the team is exactly the same.
Exactly.
You know, they're sharp. They're
that's
ready.
What you call a team.
Right. Exactly.
And that's why they're
exactly.
successful. Everyone sticks together.
And literally, that's what, you know, we have on the phone here with us now a gentleman that taught me about being a team. I mean, you know, we would go to races on a Saturday night at Orlando. That was one thing. But when we stepped up with Lee Falk on the phone with us
Mr.
Lee Falk is right. When we stepped up and made that next step, I saw about how teamwork, you know, was supposed to go. And you learned real quick with Lee, which was a good thing, you know, because the learning curve was really reduced when we went, and Bobby was able to go along with us as well on several occasions. Lee, thanks for being on the radio with us tonight here at Real Racing USA. We're talking about Pete Orr tonight.
Hey, buddy. How y'all doing?
We are doing great, man.
Uncle Lee, I'm glad you could join us tonight, sir.
Hey, Bob. How you doing, buddy?
Good, sir. Appreciate you being on with us tonight.
Hey, you know, for your dad.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, we just got the phone with David there, and then you, and then Dad. And I just think of a picture I seen the other day that me and Scott looked at. It was you, my dad, Russell, and Ed Meredith, and I just think, what a clan, and what some, how about some memories there, huh?
Man, I'll tell you, we had some times back there, Bob. Sometimes I sit around looking at those same pictures, and the racing today sure has changed a ton from the way that your dad and me and everybody used to do it. Your dad was old school, you know?
Yep.
And the way that the things go today, it's just that the times have changed so much, Bob, that, you know, it's Pete kind of put it, him and I, as you well know, Bob, we're good friends, and you know, we raced a lot together and hung out a lot together, and you know, he kind of came from the same school as I did by building my own cars and building my own parts. And
I remember one famous story he told about you is you guys were off racing somewhere, and he went to go out for practice. The guy told him to go out. The safety worker told him to go out. The tow truck was coming. Hit him in the left front, knocked the wheel off. You welded a A-frame tire back on with a coat hanger and a torch.
Yeah, that's exactly true. We went at Lanier.
That Lanier, that's right.
And knocked the left front wheel off his car, and you know, everybody was ready to load up and go home. And of course, for being from that old school like me and your dad, you know, I said, "Man, we're gonna fix this thing." And all I could find was a cutting torch and a coat hanger out of my trailer, and we welded her back on and race.
Lee, isn't the old school still the right school?
Yeah, absolutely. It all boils down to, you know, preparation, and where I've got some problems with the kids that are growing up today is they don't get in and do what they need to be doing on the cars. You know, they need to work on their own cars, learn how they work, and that's Pete is so good at that. I mean, that's why he kicked everybody's butt in Florida for so long, is that he knew about his race car. And some of the problems I have today with the kids growing up, they don't care about what their race car is. You know, they either buy the new cars already built, or they'll pay somebody to fix them.
Absolutely.
That's where your dad shined so much, was he knew every part of his race car, and that come with
somebody like David Russell giving him the atmosphere and the equipment and the people and the money to do it with, and that's why they had so much success together.
That absolutely set your dad to another level, that he had the funds, you know, finally behind him to do what he knew how to do, and get the right equipment and press on. You know, David was definitely a big part of what your dad was, but deep down, I mean, it's kind of funny. I was looking on Karnak the other night, and I seen a picture of your dad in a 55 Shelly.
Yeah, we looked at that earlier, too.
Man. I put that picture out there.
Yep.
I laughed. But you know what? If you look at that picture, and I know people on the listen to us on the phone, they don't realize what we're talking about, but your dad was so far ahead of his time because that picture that I looked at, your dad even had the body lowered down on his old 55 hobby car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything was low to the ground, and you look at everybody else's, you know, and it was 4 foot off the ground, look like a four-wheel drive.
Right.
But Pete was actually thinking, you know, back then, how can we make this stuff faster? And
exactly.
Same deal in the hobby cars. That's why he wore their butt out down there, too.
Yep, that's right.
That's funny. You know, Lee, we've talked to so many people. We've had a chance to talk to Darrell Waltrip tonight, to David Green tonight. David, as a matter of fact, had some words to say about you. No, I'm just kidding. He said said to tell you hello and how are you doing, that kind of stuff.
Right. He said, say hello.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. And but you know, everybody that we've talked to, from Travis Kittleson, David Russell, B.J. McLeod, Justin Draughty, they've all had to say, everybody has said he was much more than just a teacher, than just a person that set my race car up.
Oh, absolutely. He was past all that stuff, Scott, he was a good friend of mine. You know, bar none. I mean, him and I had been off at times before. It had nothing to do with racing and just talked about life in general. And, you know, he had a vision where he wanted to go, and even with his school. You know, unfortunately, his life got cut a little short there, and he didn't get to carry it on as far as he had visions. And I'm pretty sure Bob's going to take that up and get running, and I'm happy for that.
Well, I appreciate that, and hope
maybe we can all be a part of it together.
Sure, I look forward to that, Bob.
So there you go. But yeah, Lee, you know, I know we've had a lot of times up the road, and Bobby included. And we've had our funny stories when we've been going up the road with Buzzy and all of us, and
oh, yeah.
And Pete's always been a part of those stories too. And you know, it's just like you said, it's a shame that it got cut short, but I guess you just have to look back and say you have to appreciate the time that you have with somebody like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can find anybody in the racing community that can say anything bad about Pete or his family, for that matter. And in the racing community, that's hard to find.
You ain't kidding.
You know, Lee, you're absolutely right. And, you know, of course, doing Karnak.com, we become a magnet sometimes. If somebody's got a piss to moan about, they'll call me up or send me an email. You know that. And
sure.
In 10 years, you're absolutely right.
Never,
there's
not
nobody.
No,
nobody.
I've never read a negative comment about
nobody.
I kind of hate to hear anybody that had a negative comment, to be honest with you. But, I mean, everybody we've talked to tonight, and we have talked to the class of racing in general, and everybody has had such good things to say. But, hey, you know, it's a tribute to Pete to have people like yourself that are still out there, that are still blue-collar, because, you know, there's just so few left, and even Darrell Waltrip was saying the same thing. It's just not like that anymore. And it never will be again, it seems like, and that's kind of a shame, but that's just the way it is.
Universally, that's what everybody has basically said tonight. It's just not the way that it was, and it's a shame.
Right.
Well, racing, you know, I mean, everything goes in circles, and racing has came light years from where it was 10 years ago. And I mean, it's kind of sad because I'd really like to see where Pete would be in this whole scheme of things right now, you know.
There's, yeah, some days I wonder, because some days I think he would be here, but then I turn around and think, you know, he would be there. You just never know. But yeah. I guarantee you one thing, whatever he was doing, he would be at the top, and that's pretty much where he stayed, along with.
Sure.
And that goes along with, there was like I said, there was a group of you guys. It was you, and it was him. It was Meredith. It was Russell.
I mean,
was
that
King,
was dominant. That's when they
it was
dominated.
Anderson. Uh-huh. And you guys raced together back in the day where there was real competition. There was. That's how you guys ate. That's how you provided for your families. And that's when, as in Darrell Waltrip said earlier, that was blue-collar racing. And I think that's kind of what everyone's getting an appreciation for tonight of really how it was back then compared to now.
Well, that's funny, Bob. We all got, you know, we were all on a percentage to drive those race cars. And I was fortunate enough to drive for David Russell, same as Pete was. And we all had good cars. And I won a lot of races in David's stuff, just like Pete did. And we both... You know, we knew how we went to the races with no money, and we also knew how to go and spend money wisely to get what we needed to do to win.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
And that's,
yes, sir.
We didn't waste money. You know, I'm not a big fan of fancy haulers and stuff. me and Pete used to sit and watch when the big toter homes first started getting going. You know, Pete and myself have never been to the racetrack. And they said, gentlemen, bring your haulers to the front.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Waltrip was talking earlier about how his open trailer was a tire rack on the top, and he had one extra spring. To go to Birmingham, to Huntsville, he had to rotate the right to the left and the left to the right. And he was just telling some old stories and some old school stuff, and we really appreciate you.
Your dad both has won more races off an open trailer than we ever have off an enclosed trailer.
That's exactly right, man. You think about that. But
that's how he supported his Winston Cup habit for a while.
That's right.
Was running the short tracks.
Yep.
Well, you know, just always keep in mind that you and Dad were good friends, and he thought a lot about you. And you guys have your own personal little memories there, and laughs and deals that you can always keep to yourself too, I'm sure. So, really appreciate you being on with us tonight, and thank you for everything you always done for me and my family.
Anytime, Bob. You know that.
I'll be in touch with you.
Sometimes I'll tell you some stories off the radio about me and
your family. Yeah, they got to say those first.
Yeah, thank you, Lee.
I was going to leave that out. I already knew that.
This is still family hour. But
all right, guys.
Thank you, Lee, thanks a lot.
I appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot.
Later.
Our main man, Lee Falk, up in North Carolina, man, he's doing a good job with his school. He's got going on up there. Got some late model stocks. Allie Owens up there doing a great job. She finished sixth in the last race.
And his other rental car.
She's racing some serious people. So that's a good deal.
You know, your dad died in November, and immediately on the Karnak.com Florida Stock Car Racing message board, there were people putting posts on there imploring the Fast Car officials to rename the race.
The Orange Blossom.
The Orange Blossom, because Pete had won that race
four times.
Four times. And there was all these people coming on there imploring officials to change the race, the name, and they did. And that was what, when I saw that course, you know, I was around your dad because of him working with BJ, because I had been doing, you know, was following BJ and working. I forgot to tell BJ about Terry Wall, who's working with us now. But we decided to, when I saw that, you know, of course, you get a feeling about people, you know. And, you know, when I walk into a room and I sit down and talk to somebody, I can tell, I just get a feeling whether I'm talking to somebody that's a good person or maybe I don't want to really be close. And I always felt right from the beginning that Pete Orr was a special kind of person. And when I saw the outpouring of people's emotions and things, that was when we decided that.
Well, it was
to me, he represented more than anybody that I've ever seen, because sportsmanship to me is like was always a thing that's really kind of been lacking in a lot of areas of stock car racing. It was always something that just seemed to get third place. And nobody that I've met before or since exhibited that more than your dad, even though I didn't know him as well as any of those people did or was around him that long.
You know,
that's why we decided to do that. And I felt, frankly, I felt a little like maybe I'm stepping out on a limb I don't need to go on. But, you know, I'm absolutely glad
have
we did
it. To have an annual award named after my father and seeing the pride that people take in it when they receive it. There's
serious pride, too. I mean, seriously.
Bobby Sears was choked up. He was happier than all happy out could get. And he was – when people realize, even like Lee Collins, like him and my dad may have raced not – they may not have raced together for 25 years, but Lee has a respect for my dad and every – you know, and the little bit that they did race together was good. And, you know – just all around, the Sportsmanship Award has been a really good thing, and we really appreciate you guys. That's another level of something that none of us in our family has expected. And it's, again, it's just the name and how much respect and how much people really cared about him, and that's where it's taken all this.
And obviously, looking at the list of people who've talked to us tonight, there's no question about it.
You know, I just started out this media stuff, you know, and you and I were just starting out, Karnak. And we did the radio show,
yep.
You and I, and we interviewed Pete. And, you know, I was just a fan, basically.
Right.
You know, I supercharged into all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And we went to New Smyrna, and I walked up to Pete and introduced myself. And, I don't know, one of the best memories I ever have of doing this stuff back then was, oh, yeah, I know who you are. I read your stuff all the time.
That's pretty cool.
Whoa, yeah, and then I was just dumbfounded, couldn't think of anything else.
First
to
time
say.
I ever saw Lee followed to me to the track, and I said, well, who's that guy over there? And he smacked me in the back of the head. He goes, it's the best driver you ever see. I was like, okay.
I guess that's one thing that was a lot different for me is growing up, I mean, he was dad.
Right.
It wasn't just racing. It wasn't how we can make my car better. It was life. And unfortunately, he was shortening my curve for me a lot, and unfortunately I don't have that no more. So I've had to do things to, you know, go about things differently, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether I could change them or not. But I know with him here, things would be a lot different, but you can't look at things like that. You have to look at the good things, how people have come to you in time of need, how they responded. Look at the hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of posts that were on Karnak when that horrible time was going on. And the support we had from all of our family and our friends and everyone in the racing community, that's another thing. The racing community is another family.
Absolutely.
There is not a soul there when you're in time of need of somebody who won't come out to help you.
I mean, they'll say whatever they say on the message boards, or hell, they'll say it to your face, to be honest with you, but when the true time comes, the racing community.
He had a little spicy sense of humor, too. I was looking for Leroy Porter.
You know, just so you know, I've been trying to call Leroy, and the thing is, it says all circuits are busy.
We tried to talk to Leroy tonight, but something
can't
happened.
Be a show
there,
without Leroy.
You know, I was looking for Leroy Porter. I'd never met him. I had no idea about his accident at DeSoto or any of that. So I was at DeSoto Speedway, and I was looking for Leroy Porter because somebody said I needed to talk to Leroy Porter about safety issues or something. So I'm looking for Leroy Porter, and I go walking up to Pete Orr, and I ask Pete, do you know where I can find Leroy Porter? And Pete says, Well, I have no idea where he is. Well, he's standing right next to me. I mean, he played with me for a minute. Then, you know, it was just a funny kind
there you
of
go.
Thing, you know.
Hey, he's sitting right there. I mean, yeah, well, we're trying to get Leroy on the phone right now. So we got because I said we can't finish the show about Pete Orr without having Leroy Porter on here. So, and every time I called, it said the circuits are busy.
He's
That's how many people are showing up.
But that was a funny little thing there.
Yeah. You know, when we talked about doing this show, you know.
I don't even know how this all came. I
mean,
it just happened.
Scott was going to come down and do the show. Yeah. He said Bobby was going to come down. You and I said, well, why don't we make it a Pete Orr show? You know, and it just came quick. I mean, we've got people that are begging from North Carolina to be on this show, you know.
Absolutely.
We would not finish this show, Leroy. We're running over time. I said I will not finish this show unless I get Leroy Porter on the phone.
Leroy, they're closing this place down around us, but we're with you.
We're
man.
Going green, white, checker for you.
Green, white, checker. That's a tough deal, brother.
Porter, I had to get you on here personally, brother. They couldn't pull through for me. I had to pull out my cell phone and get you on here personally.
We got
to
get this kid a job.
I don't know what the deal was there.
I didn't either.
The circuits were so busy, everybody's trying to call you, Leroy. No, we're on here, Real Racing USA, talking about, obviously, memories about Pete Orr. Bobby's here with us. Just want to get your thoughts and some memories about Pete Orr and your relationship.
Well, you know, I never really got to race with Pete a lot. I got hurt in 1990, and that's about the time they hit their stride up there, and they were taking them horsing around farms cars all over the place, and they were beating everybody in the country then. But back in 89, when I was racing a few times, I got to race with him some, but not much. And after I got hurt, I was just hanging around, not doing a whole lot of anything. Pete called me up, 105 spot for him. So I took off and went over to the place and drove around all over the country with Pete, trying to do a little racing, do a little spotting for him, and whatever he wanted me to do, help.
We ate some good groceries too, didn't we, Porter?
Thing. We stopped and we had a few groceries too. Bob, now he's just a little old kid. Then he come back, sit in the truck with us, and we ride all over the country and for hours and hours at a time. And Bob sit back there in the back, and I remember when he was real little, he used to say, what happened to you, Porter?
Thanks, Bobby.
He said, what happened to you?
Porter, you didn't have to throw me under the bus on the radio, bud.
Right there in front of them all, Bob.
Damn. I didn't know he was going to do me like that. I may not have called so quick. No, but, hey, you know, we're on, Karnak's doing a really awesome tribute to Dad tonight. We've had.
Oh, they are. I listen to every bit of it.
You listen to every bit of it? Well, we appreciate that. And, you know, we had to get you on here. And you know what, man? You guys had a lot of memories. And I remember many, many days at Race Car Engineering, we'd all go to lunch. And me personally, that's a lot where I think maybe a lot of your memories would come from. Am I right?
That's exactly right. Me and your dad went to lunch every day just about when we were at Race Car, it seemed like. And he called me down there to help him out a little bit when I wasn't doing much then either. I wasn't doing a lot when he called me to go spot for him.
It's all right.
It don't seem like I do much.
Yeah, but somehow you're always attractive.
I helped him out a little bit, and we went to lunch every day, it seemed like, and we had us a good time down there, race car engineering, what we were doing and stuff, and it was all fun. Well,
that was it. I know you guys shared a lot of good memories, and
nothing but good memories.
And you guys were pretty good, you know, a little bit of competitors there until bad things happened to you, and then y'all became great friends. And well, you ain't my friend, you're my family. That's how I think of you. I'm sure that's how a lot of people think of you. And
yeah,
and I
do.
Know that that you and Dad were, you guys, like, you know, just like I told Lee Falk and Mike Cope and Drawdy and everyone else that called in, that, you know, you yourself had another special connection with Dad, and that was, you guys had something really special.
No doubt about it. I can tell you a little story about Pete when he first went to get that Busch deal. I don't know if you ever heard this or not, Bob, but we were, me and him and Randy Allen went over to St. Pete because Jimmy Cope had took my old car that I got burnt in and rebuilt it. And they wanted to go over there and see that thing run. So we took off and got his truck and went on down the road there. And we got over there. And first of all, we had to stop meat on the way. You know, we had to stop at the Branch Ranch because Randy had to stop.
Everything y'all did revolved around eating, Leroy.
Everything we did revolved around eating. We went to race, we stopped to eat before we went because that was part of the deal. you know. At least we got us a good meal.
Exactly. Right. We may not get on the track, brother, but we go get some groceries.
That's right. We got to have something. Then if there was a Dairy Queen or something, we may stop at that, too. But you never know. But we get down to the racetrack, we get done, we come back to the house, we head back home, we stop down there. And there happened to be a little moonshine in the fan. Because Randy had him a house up in Tennessee, and they'd bring back a little once in a while. And your dad might be known to take a little nip.
No.
Just a sip.
No.
He just used to taste it before he passed it around or something, right?
He would taste it and then give it to somebody else. We stopped at the Steak and Shake down there in Lakeland. We got us a hamburger and a milkshake. He was drinking a milkshake and that moonshine.
Oh, damn.
Pete is the only gun I ever know. We get back to the house, and we drop him off. We had picked him up at home. We dropped him off. And he hadn't told nobody about this bush deal he got. He got out of the car. He got out of the van. He stood right there, and he says, "Porter, I'm going to go in there and ask my wife how it is to make love to a bush driver."
That's a good one, man.
With the bush deal, I said, "You son of a gun, you went all night and didn't tell us a word about it." And that's how he told us about it, right there at the driveway.
Yeah, that's
there you
good.
Go. That's Pete right there, man.
He did that all the time.
That's how he was. I was just telling Scott earlier on the way down here, man. He held out, man. You'd be doing something, and you'd be aggravated, or you'd be looking for something, and over half the time he knew what you was doing or knew whatever you wanted, where it was or whatever, and he'd just laugh at you for a while until you asked or until he finally felt sorry enough for you. So.
Yeah, well, you had some good times and good memories with Pete. I know that. It was exciting all the time. We always had something to... We always had us a tale or two to tell.
Yeah.
I want to hear some of those, like Lee said. We need to hear some off the air. But, Leroy, I talked to you earlier today, and obviously you said right now you're going to kind of staying at home once again a little bit, some time off, but hopefully that'll change soon for you.
You don't need to hurry around and do anything if you don't have to. That's what I think.
Hey, it'll all come to you, believe me.
That's for sure.
Well, Leroy, thanks again for calling in. It's good to hear about those memories with yourself and Pete, and we really appreciate you sharing those with us. We really, really do.
All right, Scott, man. Y'all be careful down there.
10-4. That's Leroy Porter.
Thanks, Porter. Give me a call.
I'll do it, Bob.
See you, buddy. Thank you.
See you.
Bye.
I tell you what, boy, you can't. Every time you see Leroy at the track, I get a smile on my face.
Oh, living legend right there, man.
We do the Leroy Porter Icebreaker 125. John renamed that.
Absolutely. That's another special event.
You know, and I get to introduce him to the crowd and everything. Which is, I mean, just the first time I did it, it was just a treat,
overwhelming.
You know?
I'm sure.
It was overwhelming, but you know what? I'd go, "Leroy, how does this feel? You know, to have this race named after you and all this." He goes, "Really good. Now I got to get to the pits because I got a spot."
Exactly. Yeah. Hey,
work to do.
He was focused. That's for sure. Yeah. He had his dinner. He had already stopped by somewhere to eat.
And he probably had a Cracker Barrel or something.
Exactly. He used to tell Mike Fritz, as long as he had food, he'd come.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, Bobby. Man, what a night, man.
I enjoyed it, guys. We had a real quality list of names of people that called in tonight, didn't we?
Daryl Waltrip, David Green, Senator Bill Posey, Travis Kittleson, Justin Draughty, B.J. McLeod, Scott Reeves, David Russell, Lee Falk, John Sapercone was in the house.
Mike Cope,
Leroy Porter.
Come on, baby. That's
two
a
hours.
Show for you. That's
2 hours.
All in 2 hours. Tell me about it.
Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA.
Real Racing USA.
Bobby, we appreciate you letting us be part of this.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you very
much.
We
have a contract for you to sign right now.
Anytime, brother. Anytime.
Thank you very much for doing this tribute to my father. We really appreciate it as a family. And it's nice to know that people still remember him, his name and his face and his ways. And it's very gratifying to know how much he was loved.
Scotty Mack.
Good to be here, man.
Good working with you again, man.
Hey, it's good to be down here, man. Snook River Grill, great place to come to. Great place to talk about people like Pete Orr and have Bobby on and see you guys again.
Yeah, man. Next week we got some another
Straightliners.
The Straightliners and another set of promoters from Georgia and all kinds of crazy stuff. A
couple of weeks I got the guy who put together the Motorhead's autobiography.
Oh, Frank Kimmel.
Frank Kimmel's coming back on.
Coming back.
Talk about a statesman. That guy's class act.
We're going to be talking about that Kentucky bomber race.
Yeah, I touched him in the archives. We saw him down there in Lakeland about that. He said he's doing it.
That's right. And and tomorrow night, second edition of the ASA Fastlane, 8 o'clock.
All right.
You guys got to check that
out.
I'll
be tuning in.
Sounds good.
All right, guys.
Thank you guys very much. It was a great night.
To the limit.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bobby.
We'll be right back.
forget to tune in next Tuesday night right here on the Short Track America Network. Real Racing USA, 7 to 9 p.m. Live from the Snook River Grill, 2505 Manatee Avenue in beautiful Brighton, Florida. We'll see you next week. Good night now.